Let's clap. Let's clap.
Hello and welcome to finally yet another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. This is, I think, episode 434. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me as always are Guillaume Veillette.
It's been way too long.
I know. John Lindemann.
Here I am again.
And James Jones.
It'll always be 433 in my heart.
Well, it is our first real episode since getting back from E3. It's our first chance to talk with each other about what happened at E3, and there's a lot to say. And it's also been like at least 2 or 3 weeks since, it got to be at least 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Since we sat down and recorded a normal show together. And since then, a lot has happened. And we've had time to play a lot of different games, some of them maybe quite a bit. So we'll have an interesting new business for you right now to kick off the show before we get into listener mail and lots of questions about E3 and all the business that went down there coming up later. So let's start off with Guillaume.
Yeah, Mr. sure. Veillette. Yeah. So
I thought there was a game that came out before E3. Announced at the Nintendo World Championships, Earthbound Beginnings, and it looks like you jumped on that. So that's some pretty fresh.
I thought you were going to go with the 9 DSiWare games that came out last week.
Yeah, I didn't buy any of them. But Earthbound Beginnings. I have played part of this game before on an emulator. Like, it's one of those games that. I know. It's one of those games that Nintendo apparently sat on. They had completed the localization. And they sat on it, and a ROM made its way on the internet called Mother. And I think people usually call it Mother Zero, anyway. Or no, Earthbound Zero.
Earthbound Zero.
Right. So I'm not sure where that ROM comes from. Like, I'm not sure. Do you guys know if it's the Nintendo localization at all?
Yes, it
apparently,
is.
Apparently, yes.
Yeah, I mean, there were cartridges of that game around, so somebody slipped out of the office with it, did a dump.
Right.
I mean, I think they hacked it a little bit, though, to change the title screen.
Now Nintendo, for the first time, has released it legitly. So, yeah, it's a fun little RPG, but it's a very, very old-school RPG. Like, you think that Earthbound has some rough edges, some problems. Wait until you play Earthbound Beginnings. It does some neat stuff. Like, your character can run super fast. And run diagonally. So in theory, traveling around and exploring should be a piece of cake, but it should be very fast. But unfortunately, one of the old school problems that it has is that it has way too many random encounters. And very often you'll enter a battle with let's say even in old areas that you're revisiting, like you'll be way over leveled for an enemy. So you kill it very quickly and then you take another step and oh, here's another battle.
Oh man. Yeah. I find those types of RPGs pretty hard to play through now.
Yeah. And it's pretty rare that RPGs, like even old school RPGs like that, actually have the balls to give you consecutive battles, like at every step. And it happens a little bit too often, this one. So I don't know if it's like, a programming mistake.
Well, it's something that they improved on pretty dramatically in Mother 2, Earthbound.
Yeah, of course, on Earthbound, when you revisit areas and you encounter enemies that are way underleveled for you, then you just kill them without even entering a battle. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, but also you see the enemies, so you know they're coming. Mm-hmm. You can get prepared easily if you're afraid that you won't be able to avoid a battle. They have the effects of enemies being attracted to you or repelled from you, depending on the difference in your level.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that can help you avoid battles, if you know what you're doing or if you take certain routes. So it's a lot different. I mean, if you really are careful, you can minimize the number of random battles you have in Earthbound.
Oh, absolutely.
That was innovative at the time.
Yeah, and you can even, you know, if you face the enemy that's attacking you, or if you can surprise them, then you'll get the upper hand in battle. You'll, get a free turn, or the enemy will ambush you and they'll get a free turn. So, you know, there was some pretty good stuff there, but Earthbound Beginnings has none of that. It's much more traditional. What it does have from Earthbound is the setting that's very, you know, original, especially back in the day, you know, this kind of weird Americana kind of thing, like Japanese vision of what the U.S. is like. And you're just a little boy, getting weapons from your basement and hitting stray dogs and hippies with them. So
it's just like America, pretty much.
Yeah, basically. So it's very cute. It's very charming. And I find it. Yeah, I said it. I do.
Everybody take a drink.
Well, you know, it is. It is. And
we need a swear jar for Keon.
So, yeah, it does have problems. It is like, I don't think that anyone who has trouble playing RPGs from that era is going to be won over. I think they should stay away from this game. I think that if you're going to start with a game in the series, you should start with Earthbound. But for fans who have played already Earthbound, it can be interesting to look back at where it started, what the original NES game was, or Famicom game was. And I would say that... where was I going with this? God damn it. Well, oh, yeah. No, I did revisit kind of recently the first Final Fantasy, and I really couldn't get into it. So Earthbound, the beginnings, like the fact that you can travel fast, and the atmosphere, the kind of the setting, and the humor and the dialogue really help keep it fresh, you know? So it's keeping me interested so far thanks to these things.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bought it also. I haven't had time to play it yet, but there's about maybe 10 minutes of me streaming it on the Sunday night video stream, which is probably archived on our YouTube channel.
Probably.
So, yeah. I mean, so if you want, you can watch me play Earthbound Beginnings. I mean, not recommended for people with heart problems, but I enjoyed what I played of it. But then again, I'll say... I grew up playing Dragon Warrior on the NES and the first Final Fantasy. I mean, those were my first RPGs. So they have a nostalgic, simple attraction to me that probably means it probably doesn't work on other people.
Yeah. Well, I do have kind of a similar nostalgia for them, but going back to Final Fantasy, I thought, well, I know where the story's going anyway, and I'm not really enjoying the system of use fire and ice enemies. You know, it's not, just wasn't fun enough. Whereas here, I do enjoy seeing where the plot is taking me. And even though sometimes it's frustrating, I just emptied a full sweets factory of rats, and I don't know what I was supposed to do there. I got lots of stuff, like a butter knife, but again, like, what the hell, right?
Yeah, what do you use that for?
Exactly. So I'm probably going to resort to looking up at an FAQ at some point, but I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it.
Well, I mean, the second game is so obtuse that Nintendo actually gave people a strategy guide for free with the game.
Yeah.
So
don't, again, like with either game, don't feel embarrassed or, just go look it up. Like if you're stuck, because
don't even try. Just have the guide right next to you the whole time.
Well, actually, it might not be a terrible way to play, but
I don't think it would take. No, seriously, because I don't really think it'll take away that much of the experience for you, because that stuff isn't really the reason to play these games.
Mm-hmm. And just I think exploring,
it'll keep you from quitting.
Yeah, and exploring in Earthbound, it's kind of weird how the areas are so large that even sometimes when they're linear, there's still a lot of, like, you still want to go, like, check out the southern edge or the northern edge of an area, right? Like, you want to see it all. You want to see if you've missed anything. But they're so large and there's so many random battles that it can just be tiring, you know? So having a map handy would really help. I recommend it for fans, definitely. Should I move on to... another game?
I'd love to hear about Dr. Mario, because that's a new game also.
It is a new game, quote unquote.
Dr. Mario Snake Oil.
Yeah, basically. literally
that's
snake
Dr.
oil.
That's Dr. Wario's snake oil.
Oh, yeah.
Man. I'd buy that.
So, no, I bought this. I kind of enjoyed Dr. Mario. It's one of the first games I had on the Game Boy, so I like revisiting it. I like the music. But it is a puzzle formula that's very much its own thing. And you kind of already know if you like it or not. And if you do, then sure, get this game. It's cheaper than Dr. Luigi was on the Wii U, and it's got more features and more fun, more stuff to do. So it's a good version of this game. And if you're not a fan, I don't think really that the extra bells and whistles that they've added are going to convert you. They do have kind of a mode called Miracle Cure Laboratory, and it's basically missions. And these missions, you've got a training set of missions that basically teach you about how to play well. And then you've got some basic and advanced missions. I haven't even been able to finish the basic stuff because they pit you in a battle against a CPU, and it's kind of frustrating, and I haven't been able to get over that hurdle. And other than that, you've also got the regular Dr. Mario mode, and you've got these special power-ups that, again, unless... I don't think it's going to make you like Dr. Mario more. Like, you can get stuff that can clear viruses, the screen of viruses of one color. So I guess that you can finish a stage faster than otherwise. You've got also, when you're playing multiplayer, the other person, or against the CPU, the other person can send you stuff like you can't rotate, you can't flip your pills, or if you hit left on the D-pad, it's going to move the pill right, and stuff like that. And again, I'm very ambivalent about that stuff, because it turns out that Dr. Mario is already pretty hard, and if the other person is sending you these things and you're not paying attention, or like it just gets harder, so it just gets more frustrating. So yeah, I don't know. Like again, recommended for fans, and you know, like you can also online. There's online battles, so if you want to get your ass kicked by someone's mom, you can do that too. But yeah, it's Dr. Mario. What are you going to do? What is there to say really about it?
He's not a doctor.
I don't know.
Fair enough.
Mom's
and
like it.
Guillaume, I know you've been waiting a long time to talk about Pikmin.
Oh, I just had like this.
Because of all those new Pikmin games coming out.
Yeah, yeah. No, I just, I've had, you know, a hankering to play more Pikmin games for a long, long time. And I had my eyes set. Initially, I was going to buy Pikmin New Play Control. I was going to order it when it showed up on Nintendo's refurbished games, like Game Store online. Mm-hmm. And then they started releasing Wii games on the Wii U on the eShop. So I thought, oh, I'm going to wait for that. But immediately, they stopped releasing Wii games on the eShop. So I have been waiting in vain, and then I ended up just ordering this refurbished game from Nintendo. And it's worth mentioning, because if you're ordering from a refurbished game from Nintendo, if you care about this kind of thing, the box art is completely... It's not what they show you on the website. They've got this huge like red band that says like refurbished product. Like they really, really want you to know that you bought an inferior... product. They really want you to know that you're a second class customer.
And this isn't like a sticker or something that you can
No, it's part of the art. But yeah, so Pikmin New Play Control, I started with that, and I was kind of disappointed. I expected, because I have already played Pikmin 3, and it plays perfectly. Playing Pikmin 3 was with the Wii Remote, the pointer, was almost a revelation. It worked so well. So I thought it would work equally as well in Pikmin New Play Control, but there's a few things that they do differently. So instead of to dismiss the Pikmin, instead of shaking the nunchuck like in Pikmin 3, you press the C button. And I can't remember what the C button did in Pikmin 3, but it was used for something much more, I don't know, that you needed an immediate button for. Probably like switching your Pikmin type, actually. In Pikmin New Play Control, to switch your Pikmin type, you hold down the B button, which is like kind of the whistle button, and you press A. And so it's not immediate enough, you know, like you have to hold down a button and press another one. You kind of want to be able to switch quickly Pikmin and in the game, because you're you know, facing all sorts of situations where all of a sudden, okay, I don't need the red Pikmin anymore. I need the yellow ones because they've got the bombs and I need to shoot a bomb at an enemy.
It's funny you're complaining about this, because I've never played the new play control, but I played Pikmin on GameCube with a GameCube controller, and I don't remember there being like a really convenient, fast way to change the colors at all. There might, maybe you have to push up or down on the D-pad or something like that, but I don't remember there being like a really convenient way to do it.
Right, but the way that new play control works, like, it's even more broken than what I'm saying, because if you happen to, if your pointer happens to be over a Pikmin, even one that's already in your group, it's kind of context sensitive and you're not going to be able to switch. So you have to be aware of where you're pointing on the screen when you're trying to switch. Otherwise, it's going to whistle and it can completely screw you over.
Weird.
It really doesn't work well. And yeah, like the first Pikmin game, I didn't remember this, but the first Pikmin game has this weird thing where when you switch color, you have to kind of wait for the animation for the Pikmin of that color to get to the like in the front row in the group of Pikmin before you can like pick them up and chuck them. And it's not a good feeling, you know? Like you always feel like the controls are lagging behind what you want them to do. So yeah, I was very disappointed with the Wii Pikmin game. And I decided once I beat it, okay, well I'm going to revisit Pikmin 3 because I don't know. I feel like I should have enjoyed this more. Was Pikmin 3 really that much better? And, yes, it is. They just took different decisions to make the gameplay better. When you're chucking Pikmin, they kind of just like disappear from behind you, which can look kind of stupid, kind of jarring. Like they literally disappear from the group as you throw them. But they do that for the sake of gameplay, for the sake of, well, you're immediately throwing the color of Pikmin that you want. And it works so much better. So yeah, I just went through Pikmin 3. Like I shaved like 10 days off my previous time, like my previous score. And
are you speed running Pikmin 3 now?
Not really, because Pikmin 3 actually, like, you can go see, like, the bell curve of how many days people took to finish the game and to get all the fruit.
That's true.
And, I was a little bit, you know, on the right, of the bell curve, but not really by that much. My first playthrough, this time I'm doing much better, but there are people who finished it in like 10 in-game days. It took me 29. So
there's a glitch out there that's allowing them to do that?
I hope there's people just trying to speedrun Pikmin with glitch assists. My tool assisted Pikmin speedrun.
But I did see some people play like the extra stages, the challenge stages. Mm-hmm. And it's just scary how well they play. I think that people are just that good, you know, or just have played this game to death and know exactly how many Pikmin they need for what task and exactly where everything is. And yeah, they're just like crazy savants of the game. So
it's what all those pro StarCraft players play in their spare time.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I think people who play games like that so obsessively that they know, you know, the exact place to turn at every single second and how to manage that stuff and really like min-max it. Usually those are people who don't play other games. Mm-hmm. So right. I don't think you should really compare yourself to them at all.
No, I'm not.
I think that should be the sole standard you judge your life accomplishment against. I want us to start calling you Guillaume Min Max Fayette.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that one new playthrough of Pikmin 3 was enough for me. And it's out of my system now. And I guess I'm good for until, you know, Miyamoto announces Pikmin 4 or something.
He's good till his next hit.
Yep.
Well, I think it's easy to say that you're probably the best Pikmin player out of us four, Guillaume. I'm sure you could kick all our asses at Pikmin.
What's Pikmin?
Exactly.
But let's move on to what John Lindemann has been playing.
What hot new hotness do you have for us?
Nothing, man.
Other than Geometry Wars.
Nothing.
Resogun.
I have played Resogun last week, but
nice. No. I had a hankering, much like Guillaume, I had a hankering for some Mario, actually. So
Was it playing Super Meat Boy? Did it light up the fire?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I've been kind of on a retro kick, kind of digging through the backlog. Yeah. So,
well, you know, people. I don't think the listeners really know this, John, but you and I got to hang out a little bit after E3.
Yes. Yeah, we weren't at the show, talk about that.
Yeah, I drove out to see you because you live not too far from LA, and. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you were very gracious to let me stay with you for a night before I, you know, went back to Vegas.
Yeah,
and,
my cat enjoyed shedding all over you. That was
its highlight. Yeah, my eyes were watery, and not just because it was good to see you, buddy. But but we had a great time, and we did play some games. It's funny, John was showing off his Xbox One because I was thinking about getting. I'm still thinking about getting one at some point. You know, probably later this year, but. You were showing me some backwards compatibility stuff, so we played Super Meat Boy. It was fun. We actually traded the controller back and forth for like the whole first world, basically.
Yeah, I kind of missed that game. You know, I was, you know, because I mean that's the way that stuff works on Xbox One is it just like whatever you happen to have, you know, bought on your Xbox 360 that's in your download list, it just shows up on Xbox One, and I'd completely forgotten about. Yeah, it's really good, but I'd completely forgotten about Super Meat Boy, but I was like, man. That's a really good game, and so I started playing it. I was like, man, this is so much fun. It's you can just sit there. I mean, it's a game where you can just zone out, just completely zone out, and it's great to, you know, just like you said, just sit there and pass the controller back and forth. So it was really fun, and you know, you just kind of sit there, watch the other person go through it, and you know, hey, you know, I think you should try this over there, and then you kind of like, you know, try something different, and you make it through the level and get an A+, and it's really cool. It's a really good game.
Yeah, you know, like Super Meat Boy is hard for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be hard. So it doesn't have to be a competition of, you know, oh man, I can't believe you died there. It's like, yeah, you're supposed to die a bunch of times and that's okay.
Yeah.
And so then it becomes more about how are we going to do this? How do we solve this level as a team, even though one person's playing? I was surprised at how well it worked for that. And then we played some Geometry Wars and a few other things, but I won't get into Monster Hunter yet just because I haven't played enough of it. We talked about it some, and I made it through kind of the tutorial stuff at the beginning.
Yeah.
But I haven't had a chance to follow up on it, so hold that thought. But you and I need to play Monster Hunter together, and also we need to talk about it on the show soon.
Yeah, I scored all of my Tetsukabra armor on that. I haven't picked it up in a little while, but yeah, it's like I go in spurts with that game. I'll set a goal, and once I meet that goal, I kind of put it down for a little while and then come back to it. You know, like finishing off an armor set or, you know, getting a particular sword or something like that. So it's really good for that.
That sounds like a healthy way to play Monster Hunter.
Yeah, and I mean, it's easy because, you know, you can tear off a bunch of quests and, you know, they usually all take roughly the same time to complete. So it's good. It's good.
Nice. But what's the main thing you've been playing?
I had a hankering for some Mario. So I mean, New Super Mario Bros. U is still on the backlog for me. It's always kind of bugged me that I haven't actually played that all the way through. Because I mean, I'm probably about halfway through it. I mean, so I picked it back up, and it's interesting playing that game. Kind of, it's always interesting for me to go back and play Nintendo games kind of that are several years old. And kind of see where their designs go, kind of thing. Like, not necessarily from game to game, but just their kind of concepts. And, you know, I mean, this is very much, in line with kind of, I think, their approach to a lot of platformers in that it's not difficult to just, you know, finish a stage. But if you want to collect everything in it, it's quite hard to do so. You know, just trying to even, like, I mean, I've been trying to go through and get all of the star coins in each stage. And some of them are just a pain in the ass. I mean, some of them have, you know, where it's so obvious that, like, what you have to do to get it, you're just like, okay, I just have to do that and that. But the timing has to be so precise, and you have to actually do it in such a manner that it's just incredibly hard to pull off. It's very, very easy to screw it up. And so, you know, I've had a couple of times where, you know, like, you know, I think the most lives I've ever had, I mean, is 35 lives, right? So, which is really not too much. I mean, in you know, but I did have to go back and, you know, grind out lives a little bit just because, you know, some of the star coins, you know, you just know because you have to complete the entire stage to get the star coins to make them count. I mean, like, unless there's star coins prior to the middle flag,
mm-hmm.
some of them are just a pain in the ass, especially the ones in any of the castles where you have to not only get them, and they're really hard to get, but then you also have to beat the boss to actually make it count. So those are some of the ones where, you know, I kind of get in there where I'm just like, man, you know, I might do it. Like, I had one stage where I went in and I got a really hard star coin first time through. You know, I drop down into, like, you know, whatever room it is, and I take a look at it, and I'm like, there's no way I'm getting this. But somehow I hop, you know, I make all the right moves, and I get it, and I'm just like, I had better not die in this stage, because I am not doing that again. There's no way. And sure enough, I died in the stage because I got a bit greedy, started getting cute with things. I should have just, you know, played it safe and just gone through to the end. But I had to, you know, I'm like, oh, man, I can go get that. And then, of course, I die in some stupid fashion. And then, sure enough, I have to waste like 15 lives trying to get that star coin again. So, but I mean, it's good. I like it a lot. I mean, I really like the way they tie in, the Miiverse stuff. Even though a lot of times especially when I'm doing, like, you know, terribly with trying to get some obscure star coin, the last thing I want to do is post something to say how much I'm sucking. But I can tell you that the super god can basically just fuck right off. It's like, it's one of the worst ideas Nintendo has ever put into a game, because it's just so obnoxious.
It's secretly the most devious trolling in the game.
It's the most trolly thing I've probably ever seen in a game. And what makes it even worse is that it's put there to quote unquote help you.
Oh, they knew. I mean, they knew what they were doing.
It doesn't help you, because what happens is if you're trying to do anything of note in that game, you will die a bunch of times, chances are.
What was that game where if you lowered the difficulty, they put your character in a tutu or a diapers or something?
Oh, that was Explosion Man or whatever.
Okay.
Explosion Man.
Well, yeah, so I think that's slightly worse trolling than what Nintendo...
Yeah, that is trollier. But
the sad thing is, I think Super Guide is actually a really great idea. You know, for kids or people who don't feel comfortable playing games, but they want to keep going. Mm-hmm. I just actually played New Super Mario Bros. U recently. I showed it to my girlfriend, who really hasn't played games since she was, like, really young.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just like, I don't know if you have anything that I can really play. And I said, I bet I do. And I turned that game on. I've done this before, and it always works really great. It's like as an ambassador game. Like, if you have people over who really don't play video games, having a good Super Mario Brothers game that's available, regardless of how modern it is. Like, this game is only 3 or 4 years old, but when you put the controller in their hands and you just say, it's Mario, play it like Mario. And they do. And it's funny, because it took her like maybe 2 or 3 levels to kind of get her legs under her. Mm-hmm. And then I started her doing little things with her jump, like midair controls with her jumping and, you know, like just finagling on top of enemies to bounce up to higher things to get coins that she didn't have to get. And I was like, yep, you got it. You know, that's, you just lock into those like childhood memories. And that's the great thing about these games, is that even though, you know, it's not like we're born knowing how to play Mario, but pretty close, because just about anybody you'll ever meet has played Mario before at some point. And these games are faithful enough to the original, as proven by Super Mario Maker, you know, when you can basically use the same level design throughout the generations. But they really haven't changed that much, and that's one of their greatest strengths, actually.
Also the 2-button and 1-D-pad thing is extremely helpful. I think you'd get different results if you gave them like Batman Arkham, one of the games, like, okay, so you hold this trigger and press this button and this other button, and that's how you make him punch. But anyway.
That's exactly it. It's, you know, they kind of show you, it's sort of like they show you the tip of the iceberg, and you can completely beat the game and have a good time by just seeing that tip of the iceberg as in terms of controls. But there's a whole lot of stuff underneath it, whereas like most games, they just like, okay, well, here's the entire mountain. So you have to learn the entire mountain to actually kind of become competent in the game. Like the Arkham games are really bad for that. That's a really good example.
I can't even play them.
They are ridiculous. Holy crap.
But about the Super Guide, I will say that I think once you beat the game, I think they should give you the option to just turn it off.
Yeah.
Because if you're just going for golden coins, you know, so you can get to the last secret level, there's no point in them trolling out the super guide. It's just kind of, you know, it's mean-spirited at that point.
It's the chime of shame. I'm sitting there. I'm talking out loud at the game. I'm like, okay, don't need the super guide. I know what I'm doing, buddy. Don't need it. Thanks, game.
Are you sure you didn't?
I appreciate it.
Game does not agree. You did need the super guide.
Apparently, the game's telling me to get good. So,
yeah, that's the chime of get good.
You know, but yeah. I did get a kick out of with this game, you know, is that of course people see me playing it. And of course, TYP had to chime in on Twitter, and he's like, yeah, I see you finally gave up on Super Mario 3.
Oh.
Wow. I was like, you asshole. You asshole. But that's okay. Hey, whatever, man.
All right. Well, onward with new business. James, you had so many games listed that I didn't know what to put here. So you tell me what's the most relevant. What do you most want to talk about?
Sure. I imagine that everybody here, with the exception of John, probably has some Splatoon unloading to do. So I'm going to save that for in a little bit.
I may be getting Splatoon soon.
I think you would enjoy it soon.
I think.
Yeah. For once, I think James is telling the truth, John, and I actually agree.
For once,
that you will enjoy it.
Yeah. I will. Let's just move on.
I don't lie to you in a way that is designed to deceive. I lie to you in a way that is designed to entertain.
Yeah, for your entertainment.
They're not really lies. Like, just before we recorded, you were trying to think of the worst thing you could possibly send John. Like, which amiibo would you hate the most?
I was asking him, John, which amiibo do you think would be the worst for me to send you? I'm asking for a friend.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Kirby? I don't know.
Sonic's probably up there.
Anyway, Sonic would be up there.
If there was a Daisy one, that'd be it. But anyway, actually, yesterday was the last day for Club Nintendo coins, and I still had a ton of them left. I hadn't applied most of the Nintendo Indie Humble Bundle stuff. So first off, I wanted to do a public service announcement. If you've got a Nintendo code for a 3DS or Wii U game, you can use a browser page, eshop.nintendo.net/redeem, REDEEM. It may have a pound sign afterwards. I think it's just redeem. You log in with your Nintendo Network account, you paste the code into the little code window, you hit submit, and it downloads to your system. That's it.
You don't have to go to the system and tap on something there?
I got Donkey Kong for the Game Boy, aka Donkey Kong 94. I'd actually never played this game. It's kind of an interesting evolutionary point for the Donkey Kong franchise and the Donkey Kong character. Because Donkey Kong Country, I want to say, was 90. It was fairly. It was like 93, no. 94, right?
I think it was 94. Actually. Yeah.
So these sort of exist, you know, at the same time, even though they're from very, very different eras of what Donkey Kong is.
Yeah.
What's interesting about that game is when you start it up. I mean, I know about it from the praise it got when it came back out. When you start it up, it's the first four stages of Donkey Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And you think to yourself, oh shit, I just dropped 200 coins for Donkey Kong. Great. and then when you get through it, you get this very, six golden coins inspired kind of world map that you can travel through, and you play these sort of, I guess they're closer to Donkey Kong Jr. stages in a lot of ways. In some cases more than others. Some cases they're explicitly Donkey Kong Jr. stages. But they sort of remind me a lot of what games like Lemmings were doing at this point, where it's more the puzzle than the platformer.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily very difficult jumping, but there was a stage I was playing before we started recording where I just couldn't figure out how I'm supposed to get up this platform because Mario can't jump very high. Unless he does handstands. But then I had to carry the key, so I couldn't do that. Because basically the idea is you find a way to get to a key, you pick the key up, you take it to the locked door, and you go to the next stage. There's three doodads you can pick up to get extra lives. I'm at like 30 lives now. I don't need any more. Thanks, game. But ultimately, just the challenge of getting through the stage is the hardest part. And in some cases, it really forces you to kind of look at what the level's doing, interact with things in the level. There's switches and buttons and things you have to press, and they make stuff behave differently. There are these little items you can get that can cause temporary floors and ladders wherever you want them in the stage. There's a lot going on in this game, and the game doesn't actually do that much to tell you what's up. Usually you'll get a little animation of Donkey Kong destroying your way forward and then you using the item to reopen it, and then the game's like, figure it out.
Right. Sometimes they'll even show you moves that you didn't know Mario could perform,
yes.
And that's not the game unlocking an ability, you had these abilities from the start. The game is just very slowly telling you about them. So it's incredibly weird and kind of empowering. Like, if you go back to the initial stages, like, you can backflip your way, like, in, I don't know, in 5 seconds through the first stage of Donkey Kong. And you're like, oh, I could have done this whole time. I don't even have to bother with that, with the ladders. Well, okay. Thanks, game.
Yeah.
So if you knew all those moves, would it make it so easy, though?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hmm. So, like, the handstand jump can save you a lot of complicated platforming.
Oh, yeah.
I bounced off a wall earlier mid-handstand jump and got really, really, really high in the air. I'm not sure what I did. So, like, I can't replicate it. So I would assume I just happened into it. But it's cool. There's just a lot of stuff in this game that's kind of neat puzzle platformy stuff. You can see that this sort of move towards the Minis on the Move game or whatever, Donkey Kong versus Minis.
I mean, the original was just called Mario versus Donkey Kong, and it is actually very, very, very similar to... This was before the Minis, I think.
It is, yeah. Oh, I mean, this is Genesis for that stuff.
Yeah, but it is very similar to DK94. And I played the GBA game first and really liked it a lot. So when DK94 finally came out on 3DS on the Virtual Console, I picked it up and was like, oh yeah, this is totally exactly what everybody always said. If you think about it, it's a really cool way for them to bring back one of the most influential and important games in the company's history with Donkey Kong, and especially an important game for Miyamoto.
Right.
And put it on the Game Boy, like at the time was in 94, was still almost kind of futuristic, you know, in that you could play video games anywhere and there wasn't really any competing device that did it better at that point.
And we've talked about the Game Boy having two lifespans, the pre-Pokemon era and the post-Pokemon era, where the games get longer and become less arcadey. Because people are like, oh, you can actually put a 100-hour game on a Game Boy game.
This is pre-Pokemon, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, this game is still at its heart an arcadey game.
It's a very, very long one, though.
It's a very long one, but it does have save points and stuff. I mean, it's not like an RPG or the stuff where you start seeing a lot more of in that. Very soon after this, though, I mean, this is right before, you know, I think right before it dropped in Japan. Like, so this is sort of like a late, early Game Boy game is the way I guess I would describe it. But what I'm curious about on this kind of game, though, is where would it fit in Nintendo's lineup now? Like, how would you even release a game like this?
I think on the eShop.
I think so.
Do you think there's an appetite for it?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
I think I would love for them to go back and make a DK15, you know? And I think, you know, like, even like a place like NST, you know, who's been sort of carrying the torch for the series, even though it's turned into something completely different from where it started. But I still think those people could probably make a good one of these, especially if they had some kind of supervision from Tezuka or Miyamoto, who came in and said, the character needs to feel a little bit different, you know, or something like that. But if they made 100 more Donkey Kong levels in this style with a couple of new mechanics and they did it in nice color graphics, because DK94 has never been remade, it's never been updated in any significant way. If you get it on 3DS, it's really fun, but it's still in black and white. I mean, it's still, at this point, over 20 years old.
Yep.
And it is a really pretty great little treasure that I think a lot of people, including me, totally missed out on the first time around.
So, you know, as I was trying to drain my account at Club Nintendo, it really just turned into whatever game people have talked about on the show that was interesting. Fun fact was that it wasn't debiting my account for a little while there, so I may have actually stolen a couple hundred coins worth of stuff.
Wow.
They reset the site right at the end, and all of a sudden my total went to zero, and I'm like, oh, all right. So I guess they fixed whatever was going on in the back end. But the other one I want to talk about, it wasn't even on the list. It was actually one of the Humble Bundle games, which was Wodave, which I know you've talked about before.
Oh, yeah.
And speaking of an arcadey game, that's why I put these two together, ultimately. This is basically Mario Brothers, ultimately, the arcade game,
mm-hmm.
With a slight hint of Donkey Kong, the arcade game. because the stuff comes back up when it catches fire and gets stronger and becomes more dangerous. This game is hard. Like basically the idea is you pick up skulls and throw them at eggs until the eggs hatch, and then they turn into monsters, 8-bit, more like 4-bit monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Then you throw skulls at them still, or you throw other eggs at them, but the skulls also explode after a time.
And the eggs hatch.
The eggs hatch, and then they catch fire and turn into more mobile monsters, and then they'll catch fire again and become even more mobile, and then the game just keeps dropping shit on you while you collect pennies.
Right. And you get more coins if you wait for the harder versions of monsters to appear. Like, when you kill them, you get way more coins.
Oh, yeah. Which sounds perfectly reasonable until the game's dropped, like, 13 things on you at one time. You're like, okay, I really can't afford to wait right now. It's a weird game. Like, for not doing a lot, and I say that, I don't mean that pejoratively. I mean, it's a very simple game. I mean, I described it as, it's Mario Brothers, the arcade game, with a little touch of Donkey Kong, the arcade game. I mean, it doesn't have the climbing, but it has the powering up enemies. It's like, I mean, that's what the game is, essentially. But it feels very hectic while you play it. And some of that's probably visual. It's got this very weird art style. But it's definitely believable as a remake of something that could have been in an arcade in, you know, 89, 88. Maybe up as early as 85. That you could have seen in an arcade then made by, I don't know, Arcos or somebody. It's a weird game. And if you've got the Humble Bundle, I mean, you have this game, but it's certainly worth, you know, throwing a few minutes at. I don't know that you're going to dump a bunch of time into it. And I don't know that as a retail purchase, or not retail, but as a sale, I would recommend it. But it's certainly something that you can experience for yourself. Let's put it that way. I'm actually going to sit on the rest of these, unless we want to do a little bit of Splatoon.
Yeah, let's jump into Splatoon, James, because I've been playing it too, and I know Guillaume has.
Yeah, I want to hear what Johnny has to say about it.
I would actually like to start a little bit. I've never talked about it on the show because I got it right before with E3. But
you've already played a lot more than I have, and I've dumped E3
a bunch of hours into it at this point.
Yeah,
and I mean, I kind of want to talk a little bit about the rollout, because I think, you know, the game mechanics have been talked about pretty thoroughly. The game's been out for about a month and some change at this point, so people know what this game is. But one of the things that was a big concern when this game came out was that Nintendo was launching it with, was it one mode at that point? It was two.
It started with just the Turf War. And it lasted maybe like 5 days in North America anyway. Like, we went 5 days without another mode, and then they released, 5 days, a new map, and soon after, Splat Zones.
Yeah. Now we're at three modes, I think. Because there's the one where you ride the platform around to score points.
Yeah, the tower mode.
Control tower.
Yeah. So, and they're constantly adding new weapons to this game and maps. And, like, at first I was like, is the game just not done? But, I mean, it is very clearly all this stuff's already on the disc.
Absolutely. I mean, this stuff, it was done. The weird thing is they didn't let reviewers play that stuff. Other than ranked battle, I don't think they really got to play most of the maps and didn't get to use most of the weapons, even though they are part of the game that is shipped on the disc.
Right. It was a very deliberate, like, so at this point, Nintendo's basically every, I don't know, 6 days sending out a press release saying, hey, new gun today, the Squib Blaster. And you're like, what the fuck's a Squib Blaster? And it looks like, it's like an octopus's face, like an Octorok's face with a nozzle on the front. And you're like, oh, well, I got to get me that. It's a very, I don't want to say devious, but it's a surprisingly forward-thinking approach for making that game continually get talked about. You know, they're doing something very similar with Smash Brothers. They made a big production about when they announced the Smash Brothers DLC right before E3, and they should, for what they announced. Like, those were fairly significant announcements.
It was a lot of stuff. Yeah,
everything except Lucas there was important. So, like, it was definitely worth announcing. And they've been using that to sort of push that game back into the spotlight periodically. Whereas this seems like the most evolved version of that, where they're pushing that game into the spotlight basically daily.
Yeah, I think I would bet you that it has a lot to do with the fact that it's a new franchise.
Yeah. Oh, certainly. Definitely does.
So they want people to hear about Splatoon over such a sustained period of time that it becomes like a well-known quantity that people are talking about on some level for basically a really long period, whereas otherwise it might sort of very quickly kind of shake out to the most hardcore people who are going to be playing it for years to come.
Yeah.
And then everybody else is like, I checked it out. I had fun. I'm out.
There also aren't any other Wii U games to talk about, really.
That's true. Yes. It gets them through the doldrums of the summer where they really aren't releasing anything.
Here's the thing. They could have released Yoshi because Yoshi did come out in Europe. Yoshi's coming out in Japan next week. Mm-hmm. Nintendo of America opted not to release Yoshi.
Because as Charlie Shibetta told us at E3, they just don't sell very well in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, basically they say right after graduation they get a little sales spike, and then it sort of chills out for a while.
Yeah, I bet they were pushing to get it a little bit earlier, and then Japan just couldn't do it. Nintendo,
And they got to produce those damn amiibos. Because that game is coming bundled with an amiibo as one of its core, retail options.
I guess so.
Hopefully this means that when that game comes out, it won't be fucking impossible to find amiibos because Japan and Europe will have been satiated at that point. It's cool that they're really pushing this game. Like that they're making a consistent effort to make sure this game is being talked about. And it does seem to be translating into really solid sales for them. It's sold over 1 million units already. That's retail digital combined. It's selling remarkably well in Japan for a Wii U game. To the point, I think it was like fifth last week, but I mean, it's been trending up in the top five in the Japanese charts since it came out, which is fairly impressive for that system, especially
for that genre
in Japan.
In that region. Yeah. I mean, it's doing very well for them. There were reports out of Japan that the game wasn't available. You couldn't find retail copies.
Yeah. I think its first week it sold through 97%. I think.
Yeah, some sort of like that. And in Japan, retail sales still seem to be dominant. But like, that's a very successful product launch.
Yeah,
for Nintendo.
It's maybe not a phenomenon, but it's a hit.
It's solid.
And Nintendo, it needs a hit, and it's a hit kind of out of nowhere, I'm excited for Splatoon. I mean, yes, it's fun and I'm enjoying it. I don't know that I like it as much as a lot of other people do, but I wish I had more time to play it. I'll put it that way. I do enjoy it a lot. There's still a bunch of stuff I haven't even gotten to try yet in it. But I think more than that, it's an exciting garden for them to try new ideas. You know, you see them experimenting so much with it, and the fact that it's popular means they're actually going to get to see how this stuff plays out on a large enough scale that they can really collect good data. And because it's an online game, they have all the data from how people are playing and what they're doing and what modes are the most popular, what times of day do people show up, what kinds of guns are people the most interested in using. This game has a metagame in a way that really nothing else does in Nintendo except, I guess, Smash Brothers.
Yeah,
I know,
I mean,
Mario Kart, I don't know if I call that a metagame or not. I mean, you know, there's like certain build outs you can do that are like really crazy, but
yeah. I mean, what I like is that it's kind of proof that to Nintendo that yeah, these kind of games will sell on their consoles. You know, they're people that play their consoles will play these types of games.
Well, they will play these kinds of games when they are presented in the way that Nintendo makes them.
Yeah,
I think that's big portion.
I don't think Nintendo thought that up to this point.
I mean, they must have thought it when they made this game.
When they made this game, but I mean, up to this point, it's like, why have they not made this game up to this point? Like, I mean, obviously there was something where they were just like, meh, we don't really like first-person shooters, or, we don't think it's the kind of game that we want to make, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it seemed like there was always something holding them back. Like, they had some rationale to not make this type of game, because meanwhile, everywhere else outside of Nintendo land, these games are blowing up, regardless really of the tone of the game. These types of games were just blowing up huge everywhere, and Nintendo was always reluctant to really make these kinds of games.
Yeah.
This and sports games were like the massive gaps. And sports games are like whatever, you're not going to compete with Madden and FIFA anyway, so who cares really?
I wonder if it was just they didn't feel like they had the expertise to make it.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been something.
Like, they must just not have felt qualified to produce these games.
I think you're right, though. I think there's a lot of that, and I think it goes back to the days of the N64 and Rare, you know, where Rare became extremely famous for making these kinds of games. And you had third parties doing it as well, like Activision with Turok and stuff like that. But Nintendo wasn't making shooters back then. And then in the era after that, it was Retro Studios, the American guys, were making the shooter. For
or NST that made the Metroid Hunters.
Yeah. They're in Washington. So, yeah, this game is notable for the fact that it is made internally, and I think it has a lot to do with those people, you know, who we were introduced to last year at E3, who were like, yeah, this is our first game that we're actually in charge of, and we have this crazy idea that, like, Miyamoto would never do this shit, but somehow we're getting away with it. Because Nintendo's, like, real desperate right now, and they had the freedom to make something really cool it is shockingly different for Nintendo. And at the same time, when you play it, it has the Nintendo charm and it has the Nintendo polish. It has the Nintendo smoothness and feel. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it's easy to say, well, Nintendo probably could have made a game like Splatoon 10 years ago, but a lot of the technology that it uses is, you know, they've stripped away a lot of the like granular control that you would get out of a PC game that has this kind of, you know, online matchmaking and stuff like that. But also, there's a lot of pretty sophisticated things going on underneath that I think, John, when you play it for yourself, you'll recognize some of that stuff and you'll be like, huh, this interface is maybe overly simplistic for my taste. I'd like to be able to change a couple of settings here rather than just say, I'm ready to play, because that's basically what Splatoon is. You walk through a door and it says, do you want to play online? And you go, uh-huh. And then it says, okay, wait 2 minutes and then you're going to play.
Mm-hmm. It'll ask if you want to be ranked. Do you want to rank?
No, it won't do that until you get pretty deep into it.
Level 10. I mean, I got level 10 in 2 settings.
Okay, well, you are James Jones, and I'm not, most people are not. I've owned this game for almost a month now, and I'm still not at level 10, although I've played it maybe 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
But I'm still not to level 10.
What I think is most... So there is a sense of world building in this game that I think is really clever. We were talking about, Johnny and I were talking on Monday when we were playing it, is things like when you're in squid form and you hit a wall that you can't climb up, or you hit a wall you can't pass through, they make the Octorok sound from like a Zelda game. But you never hear it because the music's thumping all the time. So the only time I ever heard it was when I was in this weapon test area. And now I hear it every time it happens. But like, there's things that are like, there's bloopers all over the background and stages, just like little sketches on the walls. I don't want to spoil the end boss, but the end boss, his animations, like there's little ticks in his animations that are very
they're kind of callbacks, probably, right, to other games.
They're either callbacks or they're just super attention to detail, and you could totally miss that they're even happening. Yeah. But once you see them, you're like, oh, okay, never mind. That's and he does it the whole fight. And you're like, oh wow, that's insane. What is happening?
So you played through the whole campaign.
Yes, I've cleared the campaign.
What are your thoughts on the campaign?
I liked it. The biggest issue with the campaign is kind of funny. It's actually the hub world.
Yeah, it's not so good. It's kind of a maze and just trying.
Stupid stages.
They're kind of invisible in the first place. And sometimes, like, you know, like, okay, there's like this block in space right there. I know I have to get to this block there. But the way is to get there is perhaps like you have to go south instead of north. Like, you know, like it may be like the path is at some point the paths to get where you want to go are overly complicated.
A great example is there are these things in the game that I can't remember what they call, ink ribbons or something, where
zip lines, incline.
Yeah, there's two metal things and you know, air between them, and when you hit the big one, it shoots basically a stream of ink to a small one on another platform, and then you can ride back and forth in squid form. But in the hub world, there may be a scenario where you can't get to the big one to light it up, essentially. Right. So the trick is you have to find somewhere else in the stage where you can arc a shot long enough distance to hit it. And then activate it, and then work your way back over to like the small one and jump down the zipline. Because the big one may be where you're trying to get to. So I actually don't mind that part. A lot of it was just wandering around going like, all right, I'm missing one stage. Where is that stage I am missing? I am very frustrated right now. Where is it? Right. Now, In the third and fourth worlds, it was better, but in the second, it was miserable. And I don't know if there's something about that stage. The fourth one, I very quickly worked through it. So it gets better. I don't much enjoy collecting the gold briefcase or the gold scrolls, the sunken scrolls.
I thought that they were not that cleverly hidden for the most part. There was like maybe on the fourth level, like very early on, there was one where there's something very counterintuitive that you have to do. Like you have to basically let the enemy shoot at you,
right,
to get it. That's the one that gave me the most trouble. But after that, I thought they were going back a little bit too often to the same bag of tricks.
Yeah, I got
What's the reward for getting those things?
Just more lore, basically.
The plot. And it's very weird that they hid all of the... I mean, the plot's not super important, but they hid all the world building behind these scrolls you have to find.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think it's a nice reward. Like, you're reading those, and sometimes it's completely insane. Like, it will be like a sushi menu, and they're just... There might be a horrified comment about how, like, how could people do this thing?
Right.
But then you might have like the background for a character that you didn't even know could have a backstory, you know, like the officiating cat backstory, and it's actually kind of touching, and you're like, oh shit.
Bub is a tragic figure.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same.
That's Judd.
That's the same in a lot of first person shooters though, where they have like the little things you can collect.
Yeah,
you just, know, and they have like extra files of, you know, on this terrorist or that terrorist or whatever.
To me, the biggest pain in the butt is that the ones I missed, I have to go back and play the whole stage to get them.
That kind of sucks, yeah.
Like, because I missed the final boss's one. The final boss takes forever.
Yeah.
That is a long boss fight. And it's tough. I mean, it's a tough fight. Like, it really tests what you know. And I do think playing the game made me better in the multiplayer. Not necessarily better at combat, better at locomotion more than anything.
So
much about that game is movement. Like, so you have to go.
When you pick these things up, so they don't count unless you finish the stage?
Correct.
Ugh, it sucks.
It does. And if you die, guess
what? That
really
sucks.
Go get it again.
Yep.
Now, there are checkpoints in the stage. That helps. But it's tough.
Yep.
It's tough to get some of them. I do want to talk a little bit about what they can do, though, once August rolls around and they've got all this content out. Because they're still sort of streaming it out. I would assume they have DLC plans for this game.
Yeah, so right now, I guess from what we can tell, all the stuff that they're adding to the game is actually already in it.
Right.
And the stuff in August is actually going to be, you're actually going to be downloading that content and those new modes and everything.
Right.
So that'll be the first big expansion, might be too strong of a word, but a pretty big update to the game that's actually being downloaded.
My question
is... Not already been made.
If you're Nintendo, do you want to put out content that splits the online mode after this game starting to see its user base fall?
To me, the smarter thing to do is just keep adding free stuff because the sense of value that the game has will continue to go up over time. And with a game like this that's starting from nothing in terms of, you know, a fan base and loyalty, that could be extremely helpful to kind of get it cemented as part of the Wii U's identity and something that people really, you know, like have trust in. And then maybe with Splatoon 2 on the NX, then you can kind of announce DLC plans.
See, I was thinking more...
Once it's popular enough.
I was thinking more something like they just release a single player, like a set of single player stages, and then just flip the perspective. So what you do is you just make them, you know, the Octo Kids or whatever, and you just flip everything. And then how that feeds back into multiplayer is you get more gear that everybody can see, and people can go like, oh, you can only, if you go try to buy it from the street urchin, who is an actual urchin, which I really appreciate, he goes, oh no, you gotta buy this DLC to get that. Like, just incentivize in the multiplayer, but not pay to win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's options there. I do wonder, like, how long they will sustain just free stuff. Cause I mean, there's a lot more guns and stages now than there were even when I started playing it right before.
Yeah, but that stuff isn't really free, James. That
I know
was,
it's not.
That's
I know.
Part
I know.
Of the game
I know.
That they
I
made
understand
before
that
it came out.
But there will be August stuff that is free. Like, I don't know how long they would continue to make stuff.
That's stuff that should have been done before the
game came out.
So,
but it wasn't, and they sold a million copies without it. So maybe.
True enough. But they sold that also on the promise that stuff is coming later.
Maybe. I mean, it to me. I think they sold this on the back of a really strong marketing campaign. Like, I feel like they
did market the hell out of it. They did it more so than a lot of other games.
They did a really good job targeting, you know, younger children with advertising campaigns, which seems to have been very successful. The ad campaign in Japan is Japanese as hell. Yeah.
In Canada, like, I can't go to a movie or I can't watch TV without seeing a commercial. It's really weird. Like, there's a show called Reviews on the Run. So there's always like a Splatoon ad, and the Microsoft ad is like for Halo 5, a game that you can't play and won't be able to play for months.
Yeah, they want you to go pre-order.
Yeah, like when I was in Toronto right before the game came out, they turned the primary fountain in Eaton Center, which is a big mall, I think they turned it green and put statues of the Splatoon characters in it.
Yeah, they did the same in Montreal.
That's pretty crazy.
That's pretty prominent, yeah.
Like they put some effort behind this one, which I appreciate. Like, I appreciate that they said, hey, we're going to try to make this thing work even outside of our core demographic, or even outside of our core audience right now. We have a new franchise. We're going to make sure people know about it, even if they don't buy it. Like, they're going to know this thing exists. And it's forward, you know, it's paying forward for when you do the next one. Because people who didn't buy this game still know about this game.
Hmm.
I don't know. I'm having fun with it, and I'm intrigued by... When I was playing it just the other night, I was thinking about what interviewed Dylan Cuthbert did a long time ago, where he said, like, they'd go to Nintendo with these ideas. They'd be like, oh, no, we did a proof of concept of that game and decided, eh. And then they'd go like, oh, we got that in the vault. We just decided not to make it. Like, I wonder if this is one of the kinds of ideas that they've got back there, and maybe this one's success makes them go, maybe we'll go back and look at one of those ideas that we said nah on. Because I think that would be a healthy exercise for them in light of this game.
Yeah.
To go back and look at some of the more promising ones and say, hey, can we build a new franchise around this game that we think could be appealing? Because sounds like something that Nintendo of like 2007 would have gone, what?
Well, I definitely recommend reading the Iwata asks about this game. It just gives you a nice window into the process, the creative process that they went through, and how, like, initially they only had, like, basically they were playing around as blocks of tofu, and they were like, well, we need a character. And, like, they very late came up with a squid, but then they were like, well, it's kind of hard to identify with a squid, and... Anyway, so they turn into humans and
done.
It's kind of cool to see how eventually it clicked. You know, like, well, this doesn't feel right. No, this still doesn't feel right. Oh, okay, well, now we got it.
Yeah, it seems like no one on high was ever convinced that these types of games were ones that Nintendo should be making for some reason. Like, I always had full confidence that they could make a good game. You know, it's not like they can't.
You've said so many times over the years. I think the record will show.
I mean, I've said over and over again, it's like Nintendo can make any games they want. They just choose to make certain ones, and they choose to not make certain ones. It's like,
hey, you remember when Miyamoto said, "Yeah, I could have made Halo. I decided not to."
Exactly. And
that's paraphrasing a little bit.
Yeah. I could have made a game like that. We just never chose to. Essentially.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I do want to say that it's not just the mechanics that make that game work. I think it's a very clever blend of mechanics and just
the aesthetics are good.
Very good. Like there's even down to things like we were talking about this Monday, the two idols that introduce stages. Like, they could talk a little less. We could deal with that. But like shit, like
this game needs a skip button for Callie and Marie. Holy shit! I don't care what the stages are. Just let me play.
But I would say I appreciate that they went to such a degree of A, their name is Calamari. Like they thought that one through. But B, that they're like what they're wearing
they
on their
saw
head.
That one through.
What they're
yeah,
what
they sat,
they're wearing.
They sat there for days thinking of that one.
No, Sean, hold on. shit like what their hat is just ways you would prepare squid and sushi. It's like there's just these weird little details they drop into this game that makes it feel not bigger than the game is, but makes the game feel more full than it probably was. Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't feel like they skimped out on detail.
Yeah.
No, certainly not. But that little intro video that I have to watch every single time, even if I'm just going to play the campaign mode and I don't care at all what the stages are. They should just rename that whole video New Business, because that's about how long it is. That's how long it feels every time I turn the game on.
Hey, you mean Now Playing. It's renamed?
Anyway, speaking of new business, I'm going to try to wrap up this segment. We just have so much to talk about. Yes, other than Splatoon, I've been playing kind of little chunks of things and some portable type games because I'm now going into my fourth weekend in a row being out of town, including a couple for E3 and a family trip. And now I'm traveling for the 4th of July, but I have been playing some games. I've been extremely busy, but I did manage to finally finish Elliot Quest, which I talked about a ton early in the year. I've been going back to it off and on ever since maybe a month or 6 weeks ago. They finally put out a patch that really fixed the problems in the game. They had kept saying, well, yeah, we know it slows down sometimes and we're going to put out a patch. And then they put out the patch and it would actually make it worse. And that it felt like that happened on and off a couple of times, but they finally stabilized it. In my opinion, you are safe to go by Elliot Quest. And if you like really difficult old school 2D platformers, and if you love Zelda 2, you need to play Elliot Quest. I think if you love Shovel Knight, maybe. It's a little bit different style of game, but they're similar enough that I think if you got through Shovel Knight, if you loved how hard it was, if you loved kind of, you know, earning the money to buy the upgrades and stuff like that, looking for secrets, I think you'll probably enjoy Elliot Quest too. It's a more brutal game for sure than Shovel Knight. And it's more obtuse. I mean, I've spoken before about how a lot of the game is just like, I don't know where to go next, so I just have to try everything until I find the one that I can get far into and actually get a new power. It's very old school in that way, and if you can find a good FAQ, let me know, because I've looked at two or three of them and varying but generally low quality, I would say.
How?
And partly because there just is no one path through the game, you know. So you can do things in different orders depending on what abilities you pick up and what you find. But it's a really fun, really cool little game with just so much stuff to find. So many cool little things and some really, really intense, you know, retro 2D platforming action and shooting and dodging. The final boss battle is really cool, like great pixel art animation, and was kind of fun to beat. It took me two or three tries before I really kind of figured out what was working and managed to do it consistently enough to beat him. And there's even some kind of post-game, like, optional bonus stuff that I would love to do. I don't know if I'll ever have time. But I'm proud to say I beat Elliot Quest, and I don't think there's that many people who can say that, because it's a pretty rough game. It is very difficult and it's long. I mean, I probably put 20 plus hours into it. And it's on the Wii U eShop, and I think you should check it out. It's also on Steam. You know, you can probably get it cheaper there, but Wii U's nice. You can certainly play it on the gamepad, and I did that quite a bit. I like it so much. I'm also like super close to finishing Broken Age, like maybe 15 minutes away. My computer died on the way back on my flight home from Alabama, so I haven't finished Broken Age, but I played through 98% of it. And you know, you've probably heard it is a very traditional point and click adventure game. There were some aspects about part one of Broken Age, you know, the Double Fine Adventure Kickstarter deal, Tim Schafer, etc. In part one, at times it felt a little bit modernized and maybe a little bit progressive for the genre. I mean, it was supposed to be old school. That was kind of the selling point, right? So you want it to be one of those point and click PC adventure games. But it felt like they had kind of smoothed over some of the old wrinkles a little bit in part one. And that was that plus the really interesting story and great acting were what made people like it. And then in part two came out and everybody's like, well, the puzzles in this one sure feel a lot more like Gabriel Knight and, you know, King's Quest VII and just, you know, some of the like really obtuse, really nasty kind of point and click adventure games where, you know, Riven, if you've ever played Riven, the sequel to Myst, I mean, the puzzles in that game are fucking ridiculous. Like, yeah. No person would ever figure that shit out. it's like you pretty much shit. Have to have a guide. Like, you have to be playing it with at least two or three other people who are also figuring things out, and you have to be able to, like, compare notes.
Who also have guides.
Maybe one person's cheating. It's like Ouija board. You know, one person's cheating, but it makes it more fun for everybody else. Anyway, Yeah, Broken Age is, it is very traditional in that way. It has a bunch of frustrating, crazy stuff in it that you'll bang your head against the wall and say, I haven't seen anything new in the past 30 minutes. I'm just going to go look at a guide. And then the guide tells you to do something that you're like, well, I could have spent another 6 hours staring at this thing and never figured that out. So I'm really glad I looked at the guide. It's one of those games, but I do like the story a lot, and I really like the characters, and I like the writing, and I love the art style, and I like the music, and, you know, I like the game a lot. It's extremely problematic, but they always were, quite frankly, and I grew up playing those games, so I have a certain kind of patience for it, just like with, you know, stuff like Earthbound and Dragon Warrior. I have a patience for that stuff, and to me, it's ultimately rewarding in spite of those kinds of archaic aspects, I guess. I wish they would fix that stuff, but, you know, I'm okay if they don't. I guess that's what I've learned. One other thing that I'd like to talk about before we wrap up New Business is a game that I honestly probably would never have played if someone hadn't given it to me. It's called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Danger of the Ooze. yeah, it's a bit of an unwieldy title, but this is a 3DS game, obviously a TMNT, you know, licensed kids game based on the fairly recent, somewhat anime style, you know, super deformed looking, younger version of TMNT. April O'Neil, at least in the video game, April O'Neil is like this 12-year-old looking blonde girl. So it seems like a lot has changed since I was a kid watching TMNT when she was an adult reporter who was like chilling with giant amphibians.
Yeah.
So,
reptiles. And a brunette.
Reptiles. I'm not Zach Miller. I apologize.
I do think in the show she is still not a blonde. I think that might just be the game.
That could be the game. I don't know. But anyway, so I got this game from, I actually got this at E3 from an RFN listener who thought I would like it. So like, look, I know you would never play this otherwise, so I'm gonna hand this to you and say you should play it because it is like Metroid, and it is, you know, like I've talked in past years, a long time ago, I guess, about some of the DS and early 3DS Spider-Man games. They're kind of like here and there. It depends on who made it. But there's a few really good Spider-Man games. They're basically 2D Metroid-y type platformers, you know, where you're exploring a big grid-based map and you're getting new abilities and, you know, you can upgrade your web shooters and your combat moves and stuff like that. And some of them are really well made and feel great to play. Like the controls and the action are really smooth and it's just very satisfying to do the jumps and the swings and to crawl around and they just feel good. They're not like the best games ever of that style, but they're extremely competent and they have aspects of them that makes it, you know, like a Spider-Man game. And in this case, the TMNT Danger of the Ooze, it has certain things in it that, you know, cater to the license, certainly. And because it's about these, Spider-Man usually has the same problem because it's about a character who's mostly kind of known as a fighter. You know, you're throwing a lot of punches and kicks and stuff. That's kind of where these games disappoint me a little bit, or I kind of lose interest when they get very combat heavy. That's not the part of these kinds of games that I'm interested in. And one of the great things about Metroid, for instance, is that most of the creatures that you encounter don't really care whether you shoot them or not. Like they're hostile in that they seem like they're protecting their area and they don't want you to get close to them. But most of those enemies won't chase after you, and you can totally just run past them if you're good enough, or at least you can blast a couple and move on. The game isn't about setting up these encounters with enemies where you really have to spend a lot of time or shoot something 5 or 10 times to get through it. And the TMNT is like that. Like, all the enemies take way too many hits to kill. And Spider-Man Metroidvania stuff is exactly the same way. So, you know, it's not a new problem, but I just kind of wish they'd just let me keep going because the platforming and the exploration are really good and the controls are good. They feel nice. The four turtles are basically the same. You know, their combat moves are slightly different and you actually upgrade their combat stuff separately, But in terms of abilities, they're basically all the same. But the abilities that you find, you know, some of them are for combat, and those are like, eh, whatever. I'm not going to use that much, or I kind of don't care. But I got an air dash, which is a lot of fun. I got a roll move. I got a couple of tools that let me, like, teleport through walls or shoot throw a shuriken, which opens blue doors, but I need to find something else to open the yellow doors. And then there's another thing that lets you get through the brown doors and the purple doors. And, you know, there's a lot of gating. It's a lot of backtracking. The map is pretty good. I think they do a fairly good job of showing you roughly where you need to be heading, and of showing you where you might be. Maybe you should look for a secret path. It has save points. It's a good one of those. You know, it's actually pretty well done. And I think about halfway through it, but I'm probably going to finish it. I guess I'm a sucker for this kind of game, but you know, I don't think I'm the only one. So, this is not a game I would bet many of our listeners are familiar with, but I'd say, hey, if you're really into Metroidvania stuff and you want another one on 3DS, this TMNT game that you probably would have never blinked at is maybe worth a look if you can find a good price on it.
So is it better or much better than Axiom Verge?
No, it's not even close.
But it's not even close. Axiom Verge looks like a pile of crap by comparison.
Axiom Verge is just incredibly polished and like carefully balanced. And
but
somebody has to make them, Reggie. Somebody has to make them.
Does it have turtles? Is the question.
Oh man!
And if the answer is no, then a TNMT Danger of the Ooze greater than Axiom Verge.
There are some aliens in Axiom Verge that are turtle-esque.
But they're not turtles. They're not mutant turtles.
Oh, they're mutant. You can make them mutants.
Does it have
you can
teenagers?
Make them digital mutants.
Does it have ninjas? I mean, that greater than symbol is just getting big. Box quotes. TNMT, Secret of the Ooze, better than Axiom Verge. Johnny Metz, Ready for Nintendo, 2015.
TNMT.
TNMT.
Teenage Ninja Mutant.
TNMT, TM.
TMNT, TM, whatever. You know the game you're buying. Box quote James Jones.
Timmons.
Timmons TM. Registered trademark.
Donatello. All right. Well, that's enough new business for anybody. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got your E3 listener emails. Stick around.
Not all E3.
Mostly.
Now playing, a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com. It's been a while since we've done one of these.
Yes.
We're back in the salt mines, it is NintendoWorldReport.com. First up this week, we have a feature. E3 2015, Lessons to Learn from the Competition by TYP, i.e. Michael Cole, who returns from his semi-retirement in Florida to share his thoughts on what Nintendo could have done better at this year's E3. Yes, going there again. No, he's not trolling. He brings up great points. Read the comment thread if you want trolling.
Indeed.
Oh, I need to go back and read the comments, though, apparently. We also have an interview, Chibi-Robo Ziplash, with Risa Tabata and Kensuke Tanabe. If you love Chibi-Robo, this interview is for you. If you want to read the chronicle of a grown man with a PhD fawning over Chibi-Robo, this interview is for you. Bonus, visualizing a grown man being dragged away by Nintendo's PR rep when his interview time is up.
That grown man is Johnny Metz, by the way.
Yeah, by the way, this is the reference I made to Johnny actually begging someone to create an amiibo. It's just too far.
Yeah, it's a bridge too far.
We're worried.
Speaking of a bridge between two countries, if you will.
Yeah.
A bridge of peace. We have a feature, Nintendo in Canada, A Match Made in Heaven by Donald Theriault. Ah, Canada. A beautiful land of poutine, Timbits, milk in plastic bags, multicolored money, and universal healthcare.
All of this is true.
But why is Nintendo popular there? Isn't it just America's hat? Donald is here to tell us that there's more to it than that. Much more. You might even say it's America's toque.
Oh.
Alright, and we have a review of Earthbound Beginnings on the Wii U Virtual Console by Brian Rose. I like to think there's an alternate timeline of our current reality in which James Jones's year was made by this release. because in that reality, James Jones loves Earthbound, is one of its biggest fans, and just can't get enough of incredible RPG gameplay. Side note, in that reality, James also loves Tournament Smash. It's good times.
I actually went through a dimensional gateway and killed that James Jones. Nobody would convict me, because he has terrible taste.
Well, you technically don't exist in that timeline, so...
I did.
Well, no, yeah, I mean, you killed who did exist in that timeline, and you yourself don't, so you jump back to the portal.
I am now the champion of both timelines.
But, yeah.
All this and more champion.
By the way, James, I'm glad you made it back to your final destination.
The segment's over! There's more on AntennaWorldReport.com. Go check it out. I can't. There's more stuff on AntennaWorldReport.com. I quit. But enough of this.
Welcome back, everybody. You know, we're going to read some listener mail. This stuff is mostly about E3. It's a good time to catch up on some of those topics and talk about them. As always, the address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And Mr. Guillaume Veillette has the first email.
GX writes, Dear RFN crew, Awakening was my first Fire Emblem game because of the positive buzz and no permadeath mode. I enjoyed it a lot more than I was expecting, and I am now expecting to pick up Fates. I have not yet played the Shin Megami Tensei series or its spin-offs. I also don't claim to be super up on Japanese pop idol culture. Right. I'm sure you're not GX.
If that is your real acronym.
Yeah. That said, I watched a Nintendo Digital event and caught bits of the Treehouse stream for the crossover game, whose name I shall refuse to look up. The game seems to be an RPG about Japanese teens summoning Fire Emblem characters from a dimension where they eat creativity to stop bad interdimensional monsters from eating the creativity of Japanese idols, so a bunch of faceless animated mannequins in Shibuya don't get sad. Is this accurate? Anyway,
yes.
To best,
I'm so glad you gave that one to people.
That's the only question you have about that?
Sum up my question, what in all hell? I won't ask you to explain this game to me. I couldn't ask anyone to take on that Sisyphean task. But are you at least able to contextualize it? Any help would be appreciated, as I would like to be able to sleep again.
I think GX explained it about as well as I've heard it explained so far.
Genei!
I thought that description was very helpful for me.
I mean, this is the game that is currently titled Genei Ibunroku Sharp FE. I mean, at some point, Nintendo just said, fuck the rest of the world. This game's for Japan. Like, I mean,
dude, James, I saw on a placard on the media desk at Nintendo's booth where you went to check in for appointments, they had a release schedule, and it was done like a timeline, and above the timeline were all Wii U games, and below the timeline were all 3DS games, and way out to the right in 2016, on the 3DS part, in the bottom right corner, was that crazy Japanese name of Shin Megami. Genei Ibunroku
Sharp FE.
Of SM, what we mostly know as SMT Cross Fire Emblem, right?
Right.
Which the plebeians know as SMT Cross Fire Emblem.
Yeah, but it had the crazy Japanese name on there for North America. So as of now, that is the official title.
That's my favorite. So it was in the press kit as Genei Ibunroku Sharp FE, and I was just losing my mind as I was reading that because A, it was E3, so when you're on home team, you're kind of losing your mind already.
Yeah,
and B, like, the audacity of that title was so immense.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think if you look at Hyrule Warriors and you say, that seems like a really wacky version of Zelda, I think this game is going to be way beyond that in terms of a wacky version of Fire Emblem.
Well, I mean, it's not a Fire Emblem game, first and foremost. Like, if you watched the... I know you haven't had a chance to watch them, but the actual demo of the game is... They're exploring, well... It's not a dungeon. They're exploring a building in Shibuya. And there's a giant maid costume in it. It's like a puzzle dungeon game. Like they're running on, and there's, you know, enemy encounters. And at some point they had to make this giant maid costume arms go up so they could cross it like a bridge. It's fucking nuts. But, I mean, it doesn't appear to be a strategy game. It looks like in combat, there's, you know, things like the weapons triangle and elemental stuff that they sort of blended from both those series having that, you know, you know, SMT has the elemental system, Fire Emblem has a weapons triangle. Looks like they've blended some of that stuff together. But it looks much more like a traditional RPG. From a plot standpoint, effectively, yes, that is a fair approximation of what is an otherwise completely almost impenetrable plot. Actually, I will say that right now, according to Nintendo's press site, E3 site, the title is Genne Ibunroku Sharp FE, parenthetically, name not final. As if you had to be told that that might not be the final name. Just wondering. But, I mean, at the same time, one of the source series is called Shin Megami Tensei. So, like, right. Japanese text isn't necessarily the biggest barrier in the world. But, I mean, basically the idea is that you're following these people who are members of an entertainment talent agency, which is something that, you know, in Japan and here in pop culture is part of life. And they gain the power to merge with mirages, which are, quote, souls of warriors from a different plane. And their job is to seek out these things that are causing just mayhem and harming innocent people and stop them, essentially. So basically it's spirits are entering from the other world, and then these characters who have the ability to interact with these spirits have to stop them with the power of their performing spirit. It's weird. Here's the thing. This is a game where you're just going to have to say, it's weird and it's from Japan. I need to get over that and just do it. Like, if you want to play this game, just set it aside. Like, this game is made by people who do not give a hell about this game being super Japanese.
Yeah.
So you just have to kind of get through that. And I think the gameplay itself will be sufficient quality, especially now that we know who's making it. You know, the producers of Strange Jersey, the producers of, crap. What was the other one they worked on?
Digital Raiden Devil Saga 2.
Raiden Historia.
Oh, well, that's a good game.
And people really, really like, you know, that particular SMT game that the producer worked on. That I just mentioned, I blanked the title name already. Strange Journey. So, like, these are talented people making this game. So, to a certain extent, you just sort of have to accept that this story is complete bonkers nonsense.
Yeah, and you don't even have to have, like, an understanding of it or an affinity for it. Like, I feel like one of the things that I enjoy in Shin Megami Tensei games or Persona games is the culture shock, you know, is the fact that, okay...
Don't worry, it's coming.
Yeah, it is, like, the fact that, okay, this takes place in Tokyo, apparently, so I have that hurdle to overcome, right? Like, what's Tokyo like? Like, what are these items that apparently all these characters are familiar with, these TV shows, these idols, these, like, whatever people in Tokyo are into? So, okay, so it's a challenge to immerse yourself into that world because it's so different from... You know, like our pop culture.
Right. Make me a Japanese teenage girl.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And then the games themselves are actually good. You know, like they've got good systems. They've got intriguing stories. And I really enjoy that. But I do kind of like, I don't know, reading that synopsis that GX provided for us. I'm like, okay, what?
I mean, to give some degree of context, that yeah, the pop idol thing is huge in Japan. I mean, it is a big industry, even more to the extent that it is here. You know, there are essentially factories that job it is to turn out these carefully designed, essentially, pop idols, and they're, you know, they may not have a very long lifespan, but the job is to, you know, prep them from very, very young to be professional performers and get and maximize, you know, when they hit that window of, you know, performing them. These talent agencies, that's what they do. And there is a certain amount of that world that has kind of this really insidiousness to it, like this really dark underbelly that they probably won't touch on in this game, although they could given the people making it. But it's, even if they don't, like, this is such an integral part of what the Japanese media landscape is that, you know, the fact that they talk about, during the Treehouse Live, they talk about how, you know, one of the things they had to do was they had to find voice actors who could also sing, because these characters sing as part of, you know, who they are. And as, you know, one of the characters, you know, as her album comes out, when she hits it big, as it were, like, you start seeing the town around her transform, and you see, like, her poster up on walls, and, like, you go into stores and you'll hear her song kind of playing in the background. Like, they, it's, you know, they're trying to put people in the shoes of these pop idols, I guess, also who fight ghosts with ghosts from other worlds. I mean, it's, yeah, like I said, it's, I can explain this as much as possible, but at some point it still sounds like the ravings of a lunatic.
Yeah.
So the part
where you like summon demons and stuff like that actually sounds more grounded.
You summon warriors. So like right. The fact that you summoned a knight from a Fire Emblem game. These are specific Fire Emblem characters. And then he shows up on a jet-powered horse motorcycle. It's like, yeah, sure, fuck it, I don't care. Just go crazy. Be nuts. The combat system looks really cool. I like that they've got this, you know, where you build it up and then you can only special attacks, and these special attacks kind of work the same way that the links do in Fire Emblem, where if they have a really good connect, the ranks, I guess they call them S ranks, whatever. Mm-hmm. They attack differently, or they'll attack together. Like in this case, you get access to special attacks that are performances, because they call these spirits, actually call the spirits in question performa. Because, I mean, Atlas doesn't care. Atlas has just said, we're going to make this game as Atlas-y as we can. Nintendo can't stop us. They signed the contract already. I don't know. I'm excited to see what this game is. Like, to the point of, I almost want them to just leave the title what it is, just as a warning. Like, hey, just so you know what you're getting into here. This game is called Gennai Ibun Roku Sharp FE. Just, I mean,
not
if
final.
You bought this.
Not final.
Not final. If you bought this...
They should leave "not final" on the box.
If you fantastic. Bought this, this is on you. Like, you can't blame us for this one.
Yeah, right? I gotta say, Nintendo, figure out what your games are called before E3. Or at least come up with a placeholder that's in the local language.
But you know what? I don't... Like I said, SMT series has had Japanese titles since forever.
Right.
So maybe this is okay. Maybe it's okay that this game has... Japanese title.
Yeah, if you only want to sell it to people who are fans of Shin Megami Tensei.
Who the hell is going to buy this game anyway?
I don't know, man. I don't know. It's a 2016 Wii U game.
I don't know. Like GX,
it seems so niche.
Yeah, GX, if your curiosity is piqued, Atlas puts their games on sale on the eShop basically every 2 weeks. So I would check out maybe an old SMT game, like SMT4. Actually, it's got some very big design issues, but it's still a very good game, and I would recommend checking that out. Like, I think it was on sale for $15 or $20 recently, and for that price, you get like a big RPG, really well made and intriguing story, and actually like without the pop idol stuff. So maybe you could get into it a little bit more. You know, it's only got your standard summoning demons through a computer program thing that on the computer that you wear on your wrist, like nothing too out there, you know?
Yeah, nothing crazy like your performing spirit summoning warrior ghosts from another.
That's what the Apple Watch is for.
There you go. I will say though, this game looks cool. Like, like the visual style of this game is super cool. I liked that when you walk into the convenience store, it's the merchant from the Fire Emblem games behind the counter. Like little things like that are really neat touches. And, you know, the design world looks super cool. They spent way too much time modeling what a convenience store shelf looks like, but I appreciate the effort.
You're all about neat touches in this, in this podcast. You know, you're neat touch, not, you're James Neat Touch Jones.
That's what the ladies call me.
You're
next
welcome.
Email.
You're welcome.
Hey, actually, welcome. James, I just thought that since Sega bought Atlas, maybe they just borrowed the shelves from... the Yakuza games or something.
The Yakuza games where it's real products? No, I didn't see any Boss Coffee on the shelves of the demo, so we're probably fine.
All right.
So, John, would you mind please reading the next email?
Our next email is from Ed Lopez in Manila. During an NPR interview, just to set this up, this is about one of a comment from Shigeru Miyamoto, who says...
Are you okay there, John?
Yeah, he says, among other things, the Wii U's poor sales are because people, quote-unquote, didn't understand the system. Kind of a famous quote from him. Just didn't really understand what the console was all about, and it was hard to communicate to people. So, what he says is he finds his statement confusing. He says, let me start by saying that you are the only video game podcast I listen to. I've listened since the Wii launch in 2006. Having said that, I don't own a Wii U or a 3DS, and I have yet to play either. Enclosed is a picture of my younger brothers playing a very early home console. the picture he actually sent along with this email looks to be of James and I were discussing this about like an old Pong console that they used to sell in department stores. They would rebrand the chips for Pong.
And if he was in, you know, he's from Manila, so like who knows what Pong consoles were out there.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, you don't, it's, yeah. Who knows? I can just go by. I remember them being sold by Sears. They had a rebranded Sears Pong console. Really old school. But James noted that it looks like an APF TV Fun or a Magnavox. But anyways, it had tennis and squash. I think this was in the mid-70s. So I did not own a non-Nintendo console until 2006 when I got the first Xbox. Not the 360, which was already out, but the Xbox, the original Xbox. I did not own a Sony console until I got the PS3 in 2011. In 2014, I got both 360 and the PS4. I have not played the Wii or the DS since my move in March. It's obvious I love games, but shouldn't they be concerned about guys like me? Guys who played a ton of exclusive games on the N64 and GC to death and for some reason don't own the current gen of consoles. I played Perfect Dark on the 64, and I'm enjoying a rebirth now on my 360. I guess I don't understand the system.
Yeah.
I guess you don't, and that's Nintendo's fault.
Yeah.
And we kind of pegged it from real early on, you know, from the first time we saw it. We said, well, they didn't show the console. The name is utter nonsense and terrible and difficult to even doesn't even sound good when you say it out loud, even though maybe we've gotten used to it. That doesn't make it a good
name.
We've
definitely gotten used to it.
Getting used to something, by the way, doesn't mean it was great.
No.
Yeah.
It doesn't Monster mean Hunter. It was the best possible choice.
Monster Hunter says hello.
Well, yeah. I mean, Monster Hunter at least tells you what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of the same. It's kind of weird that this and the Xbox One almost made the exact same stupid error in naming convention in the same console generation. Because essentially you have one where you're like, wait, which system are you talking about here? Is this Wii U a Wii or is this some other thing?
Mm. And then, yeah, it's a big mess. And you know, Miyamoto also said in that same interview, he's talking about how, you know, the idea back in probably the, you know, 2008, 2009, when they first came up with the whole thing, was that they would have this tablet that would be, you know, really cool, really advanced technology.
Yep.
You'd be able to control your TV with it. You'd always have it lying around and it would be part of the family room, you know, and it would kind of, you know, become part of what the family was doing when they were in the room. They would play things together and, you know, like real tablets that you can take with you that work when you're not in your living room. Became popular much more quickly than Nintendo could have possibly realized. And instead of backing off and saying, oh, maybe this isn't such a great idea anymore because look at everything that's going on in the world. Instead, they plowed ahead and they said, well, this is what we're making. And they didn't do the things that you need to do in order to make something like the Wii U popular in spite of the changing environment, you know?
Yeah, and
it still came out with not a great launch lineup and it was relatively expensive and it wasn't marketed very much at all
and they didn't use the gamepad very much.
It was a mess on every front pretty much,
and they just stumbled right out of the gate with the slowness of the Wii console, the OS. You know, like the idea was that, okay, well, sometimes you don't want to turn on the TV, you just want to like weigh yourself in Wii Fit first. Like they stumbled by releasing Wii Fit U a year after the Wii U. But also like the fact that it takes so long to boot the console means that, well, maybe I'm not going to turn on the TV. Maybe I'm not going to turn on the Wii U at all either. I'm just going to use a balance like a normal person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we don't talk about this stuff much, but I mean, they have really actually improved the speed of the system and the user interface quite a lot. They added folders, which was one of those things that everybody bitched and moaned about until they finally did it, and then nobody says anything about it anymore because now we just use it and it works. Mm-hmm. But it does work well. The quick boot menu, the quick launch thing, I think is very good. I think it makes a big difference. And as someone who actually still uses Wii Fit U, like 2 years later, I really appreciate being able to jump into it quickly to you know, dump off my Fit meter credits and to weigh in if I want to.
Mm-hmm.
So the system works much better than it did at launch. But
if
that's
you didn't
not
have
the
a
reason.
Right.
That's not the reason Ed Lopez here from Manila did not buy a Wii U. I you know, without interrogating him on all the reasons, you know, we don't know exactly what's not appealing to him, but my guess would be you don't really see a lot of new kinds of games on the Wii U that you've never heard of before that are really like, man, I need to really check this out. Like, I can't continue yep. life without having experienced this amazing thing. It's all just kind of iterations and remakes and things that are a little bit different than what you've seen before.
Yeah.
And not that much of a quantity of that stuff. And also, maybe it doesn't seem like a great deal. Like, you know, obviously to us and people like us and most of the people who listen to this show, it's worth owning a Wii U because you're going to get three or four games a year that are so good that it's easy to, you know, it's easy to justify owning that system. But I think for a lot of other people, they say, you know, I could get a lot more good games on these other systems because of the third party support backing up the first party support.
Mm-hmm.
And I also get a lot of other things and they cost pretty much the same. I mean, to me, Wii U is still way expensive for what you get.
It is.
What
they've,
that system
they've
does.
Never, they've never cut
what
its
capable
price.
Of,
they've just bundled
not
it.
Not much.
Yeah. They, I mean, what, like $50?
They cut it once, like by $50. But,
yeah,
you know, it's... maybe E3 is not a particularly good time to announce a price cut, but I really feel like the Wii U is overdue for one. And I think if Nintendo wants to sell much of anything this holiday season, they're going to have to really become a lot more aggressive with the pricing on the system.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you mentioned, you know, a lot of the stuff that's out is remasters or whatever. And you can say that about other consoles, but the thing is on other consoles, you have all of the third parties making games for them. So it's, I mean, with the Wii U, it's come down to you asking yourself, do I absolutely have to play Nintendo games? And if the answer is no, chances are you're not going to buy a Wii U.
Hmm. Yeah, and you should play Nintendo games. I mean,
yeah,
really good.
I'm not saying,
I mean,
you shouldn't, but for a lot
bad
of people,
for Ed because,
I mean, a lot of people, you know, just don't care as much as we do. You know what I mean? Like, we just,
yeah, and,
you know,
and that's maybe they shouldn't. You know, but,
yeah,
you know, but
it's just
have,
it's just not as it's
Nintendo
not as much
disease.
Of a draw as it used to be. You know, it's not because, I mean, the biggest games out there are not necessarily Nintendo games now. They used to be pretty much Nintendo games almost exclusively, but.
Yeah, and I think Nintendo's output, I think the games that they're making for the most part lack the freshness and excitement that they did when we were kids growing up.
Yeah.
You know, back then they were making things that no one had ever seen before on an
exactly.
annual basis, if not multiple times a year. And the reality of the world is that in art, you know, in a well-defined art form, that's very hard to keep up that kind of pace. And also the games that they're making just take a lot longer and cost a lot more and need more people to make nowadays, so they don't release as many as they used to. They still mm-hmm. make – Nintendo makes probably more games than any other publisher in the industry, I think.
Yeah. Yep.
I bet you they release more games than
oh,
just
yeah.
about any other publisher. So, I mean, their output is amazing, but when that's all you have, you know, they're basically just competing against themselves, and that's not much to go on. So – they're not challenged in the software space, you know, from a design standpoint, from a feature set standpoint. People's expectations have changed a lot over the recent years, but because Nintendo is really not competing with any other company in terms of the games on their systems, I think the amount of innovation that you see in most of their titles has kind of suffered over the past few years because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure a lot of people, like from the outside looking in, if you like a certain kind of game, you look over at the Wii U, and the big games are Mario Kart, Smash Brothers, Splatoon. If you don't want that kind of cartoony game, there's nothing else to really go for. Like, there's maybe like a handful of titles, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas,
but, I mean,
whereas
it,
on other
at least
consoles,
with Splatoon,
there's
it's something fresh
endless.
And new. Like,
yeah,
that's the big
I'm
exception,
not...
and that's why partly why it's so exciting to see. But yeah, I mean,
yeah.
For the other stuff, it's like, well. Maybe that's the best Mario Kart ever. Maybe that's the best Smash Brothers ever. Maybe that's the best Mario Tennis ever. But I wasn't that crazy, or I never ended up playing much of the last one of those that I bought. And so the fact that they have a new one that has prettier graphics, that alone really
right.
is maybe not enough to pull some people forward, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I was thinking that maybe going back to their vault of ideas that never got released would be good, even if the individual games maybe aren't successes. I mean, maybe just this constant barrage of them saying, like, hey, this is a new idea we've got coming out. Look at this thing. Look at this crazy thing we just made.
It might be disruptive enough
yeah.
that, you know.
At least it gets them more attention than saying, hey, here's another Mario Kart game. It's going to be really good. Like, everybody knows this game is going to be really well made.
Yeah.
But like, versus like, hey, here's this really nuts idea we had. We made Cubivore for a new generation. Like, yeah. that would get people talking. We'd be going, what, are they on drugs? They're on drugs, aren't they?
What's happening? You know, Ed is asking, like, shouldn't Miyamoto be worried about guys like me? And I'd say, you know, when their marquee game for the holiday is arguably Star Fox Zero, I would say they probably are going after the N64 generation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That seems like a pretty blatant grab at people's
especially
interest
with that game
and memories
is.
And nostalgia for Star Fox 64. And that game was a huge hit. And they wish most of their Wii U games could sell what that game sold on N64. So, and its reputation has only been amplified in the years since. So I think they are going for people like you.
Yeah,
now, whether it works or not, it's up to them to get it right.
Yeah.
Well, getting it right isn't just making it good. It's getting it out there, getting it marketed, getting people to play it. I mean, that was the biggest problem was that with the Wii was that it was so imminently, you know, demonstrable what it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was different. Uh-huh. It was truly different from everything else in a way that mattered.
With the Wii U, like, there have been games that I thought, wow, this should be a full game. And a lot of them are in, like, Nintendo Land, where there's, like, things where you're like, wow, you could make a full game out of this. They just haven't. And maybe it's because they can't figure out how to build a full game around it, but something like the Donkey Kong Kart game. Like, yeah, I'd pay $20 for, you know, 15 levels of that. Sure.
Wow.
But, like,
it's a fun game.
There's not a lot of things you can demonstrate, you know, in an easy way of this is why this is different.
Mm-hmm.
And they've actually gotten fairly slick at it with the constant barrage of Nintendo Directs and digital events and Treehouse Lives of trying to do that demonstration. But it's so late now.
Yeah, like, all that stuff is preaching to the choir.
They had to be this good back when they showed the system the first time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and I mean, really, like, they consistently refuse to compete in terms of graphics and hardware. So they kind of live or die by the uniqueness of what they're bringing, right? And they died by it.
Not just uniqueness, but
the appeal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Presentableness.
Yep. It's risky.
3DS had the same problem.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about this. Like, how do you demonstrate this thing is in 3D? Well, you put a stupid tag on it that says 2D image of a 3D game.
Yeah. And I mean, really, the Wii could have failed the same way. It just didn't.
Could've. Yeah.
People loved it.
You know, the weird thing, you know, coming out of E3, you guys have probably heard a lot about it. But when you were there, there was definitely a palpable sense that VR is here and it's right over there. You know, like, it's not just a thing that people are playing. When you were at E3, VR was a thing that you walked past, that you decided that I didn't want to stand in the line for it because it was way too long. But it was in a lot of people's booths. Okay. A lot of people were playing and a lot of people were talking about it. Mm-hmm. And then Reggie comes out and he says stuff like, we don't think VR is fun. You know, we think it's a fad. And it's really sad to me because, and I don't know if VR is the future. I think it might be. Like, I think it has a serious shot at it. And I think it's really interesting and exciting stuff. But when you hear people talk about making VR games, working on the hardware, the kinds of new experience you can get from, people sound like the way Nintendo used to sound, you know, when they said, we're reinventing the way people play games. We're giving them things they've never seen before. We're giving stuff that you've always dreamed of being able to do, like wave your arms around and be able to control a game like that. I mean, that was actually a fantasy back in the 80s. I remember people talking about it. I remember people doing it while they played the games. And we used to joke, you know, there's no point in like jerking your controller up when you make Mario jump. It doesn't make him jump anymore. And then later it did, you know, like it feels like the future, whether it's really the future or not. And it's stuff like that where I feel like, you know, Nintendo says, well, we don't think that's fun. It's like, okay, well, then what do you think is fun? And how can you get people to try that? Because, you know, maybe it's just the overall malaise of E3 with Nintendo. I mean, this was always going to be kind of a down year for them, especially once they delayed Zelda. So, I mean, I didn't hold out a whole lot of hope, and I think I got more or less what I was expecting this year at E3, which was, it was definitely not a great year for Nintendo. I mean, I've been to enough of them that I've seen it multiple times. I don't think this was necessarily the worst it's ever been, but it was pretty close. It was pretty bad, you know. Mm-hmm. And also, it still feels like Nintendo is still figuring out how to do E3. Like, every year it feels like that. Every year it feels like, well, we figure out one thing, but we screw up all these other things. You know, like the Nintendo World Championships. Amazing. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was so great. I mean, it seemed like people were loving it from the online stream. And I can tell you, the people who were there in person were flipping their shit. It was
I mean, James and I watched it. We had a great time watching it. It was hysterical.
It was so exciting to be there. It was so much fun. And I thought they knocked that out of the park. And then 2 days later, it was just like,
you know? Like, where they pretty much had to apologize. They didn't apologize, but the fact that everybody thought that they did is sad enough. You know, like, it was bad enough where people thought that, oh yeah, I can see him totally saying sorry about that.
Well, and their presence on the floor was, you know, it was they had a huge banner for Star Fox that attracted a lot of people over and created awful lines to play Star Fox.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, clearly there was a lot of interest in it, but also that demo was 15 minutes long and had three different sections that you could play.
Yeah.
So the line was just moving very, very, very slowly, and it was just a log jam. And other than Star Fox, it was very hard to play any Nintendo game because there were so few units for it. I mean, I bet you there were at least three times as many monitors, as many screens in Sony's booth as there were in Nintendo's booth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot easier to play the games over there because if one was busy, you just went to the next one over. So there were never these really long lines. I mean, there are so many, you know, I talk to a lot of people at Nintendo about this, but there are so many great independent games coming soon or already out or coming out, you know, or coming out eventually on Nintendo platforms. Why don't you put those in your booth? Because Sony and Microsoft both do it, and it shows off the variety of games coming out on their systems. It makes up for whatever inadequacies that there might be in the first party lineup without promoting your competitors. And the other guys do it, and it's extremely successful, and it works great. And there's no reason Nintendo can't do it. They've got the catalog, and they've got the space, frankly, in their booth. There were two different stages set up in Nintendo's booth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when did E3 become about stages for Nintendo? It's supposed to be about playing the games. When you talk to them about it, they're always like, did you get a chance to play it on the floor? Yeah, after 45 minutes of waiting, I got to play it on the floor. You know, because you only brought three copies of it to E3. It's like, didn't you expect people to show up and want to play it?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, do I have to charter a plane to the nearest Best Buy? You know, to go play something? Yeah.
I don't want
to
talk about the Best Buy experience. It was bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and the other thing is people were like, man, it seems like there really aren't that many games over in Nintendo's booth. And there weren't. There were like eight games between both Wii U and 3DS.
Yeah.
You know, like eight different games to check out. I mean, within like 3 or 4 hours of the first day of the show, everyone on our staff had played every game that Nintendo brought.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, yeah, I mean, obviously we focus on their booth more than most people do at the show, but look at all the games that they have coming out soon, like even this year, that just weren't there at all, you know? Mm-hmm. You couldn't play Fire Emblem, you couldn't play Xenoblade, you couldn't play Fatal Frame, you couldn't play Pokken Fighters, you couldn't play all this stuff, and
Devil's Third, yeah.
Devil's Third you couldn't play. There are games coming out on that system that Nintendo just didn't show up with, including games that are finished that they could have brought. And I don't get it. You know, it was really strange to me. I mean, they did a good job of showing off Super Mario Maker, and that was a very popular game, and they had like 20 stations of it. So you could always play it. You didn't have to wait that long. You could always get a chance with it. It's like, okay, now do that with the other games. You know?
I mean, and
you had space for it.
And what is that result in? It's one of the few Nintendo games that's up for the Best of Show awards with the Game Critics thing.
Mm-hmm. Like, 'cause you could play it.
Yep.
I mean, honestly, I mean, I know I've talked a lot about Treehouse Live and about how I'm impressed by it, but also like it causes a lot of problems for at E3. I think for both Nintendo and especially for us who are actually trying to be there and cover the show, because at this point, it takes up an enormous chunk of their booth. This year, even more than last year, because they had all these benches set up where people could sit like an audience and just watch. It's like going to the Today Show and watching Treehouse Live mm-hmm. in the middle of Nintendo's booth. And that's all space. They could have done all that stuff somewhere else. They don't need a live audience to do the stream.
Yeah. Just, okay? I mean, if it's just going
to
be.
It doesn't need to be from their booth at
E3.
Yeah. It could be anywhere else. And then you use your booth for the people who were there to play your games, yep. of which there were many who walked up, looked at the lines, turned around, and walked away.
Yep.
You know? It's, I mean, come on, guys.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, it's a booth. You've been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah, it just seems. I don't know. It just seems like they have. There's really a disconnect in terms of what they even want out of E3 as a company. It just seems like, I don't know, it's yeah. weird. It's really weird.
I mean, I would say they're not alone in that, though, right now. Like, sure. That yeah. show is in a weird place right now.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. Sony was obviously, hey, let's show games that are going to come out 5 years from now so everybody loves them. And, you know.
Yeah. People do like that stuff, you know.
They love that stuff, and Xbox was like, "Holy shit!"
Probably learn a lesson from that.
You know, Xbox was like, "Holy shit, we need to sell consoles now, so we're going to tell you everything that's coming out within the next year." You know,
yeah. I mean, after let me say this: after E3, who thinks it was a good idea to not show Zelda?
Yeah,
does anybody
don't understand
still think that.
That
was a good idea? Because I mean, it seems insane to me now.
I mean,
especially
I,
when they're
yeah.
out there bragging that yeah, we had a trailer. Well, then what are you doing, man?
Yeah,
why are you talking to me?
Especially
go out there and show it to everybody.
I mean, especially when they have a console that people think they're taking out behind, you know, the shed and shooting,
mm-hmm.
you know, after Christmas. I mean, it's like, I don't know. It's and just, you know, talking about VR, it's interesting because I feel like Nintendo used to be this company where they were like, hey, look at this. This is really cool and we're doing it. Now, all they do is sit there and tell you what they're not doing. It's really mm-hmm. weird. It's like they've painted themselves into this corner, like we're Nintendo and we do this. And that's it. We don't think anything else is fun if we're not doing it. Which I get,
well, I mean,
understand it, but it's like
they are branching out. They are doing a lot of cool new initiatives that weren't at E3 and they weren't talking about them and they wouldn't answer your questions about those things.
Yeah. At the same time, they're still very dismissive about other stuff though. Like
yeah, they are.
Outright.
And they should you know, kill that shit. They really, I mean, the bad talking about other companies and you know what other people are trying to push in terms of technology, all that stuff can only come back and bite you in the ass. I mean, there's nothing to be gained from saying virtual reality is stupid.
Twitch
okay,
isn't
well, maybe
fun.
It is. Maybe it is, but if it turns out that it's not stupid, then you look dumb. And if it turns out that it is stupid, nobody cares that you called it.
Yeah.
At E3 2015.
Exactly, because so, like how's the online gameplay working for you, Nintendo?
Yeah, it just makes
you know
you
stuff
look
like that.
Really
it's like
backwards,
you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, how many years did they say we don't think playing online is very fun?
Yeah,
we don't think people want to do it. You know,
yeah.
And now they have Splatoon.
It'll
and
be
it's
the
like
same
the biggest hit they've had.
Yeah, and it's like it'll be the same thing with voice chat. You know, they'll add it in standard, and then they'll act like they fucking invented it, and then they'll be like, oh well, we thought it added something new to gameplay. Yeah, well, everybody else did 15 years ago. Nintendo, welcome to the party.
Anyway, this turned into a referendum on
Fuck!
E3, and I didn't mean for it to be, but it's just there's things that we need to get off our chests, I guess. I mean, for me, the real disappointment of E3 is I think Nintendo just sold themselves short. I think they're actually doing better than it looked. I think they have more games than they showed. I think the games that they have are better than they came across in that digital event. I think the stuff that's happening with Nintendo is more exciting than you would actually guess from the reaction that they got out of people. And that's sad.
Yeah, I mean, they're just really conservative. Really conservative.
It's totally their fault. It's mm-hmm. it's within their power to not, you know, for it to be different. And frankly, there's still time. There's still a good chance for them to fix all this. I think they need to probably regroup a little bit. And then I wouldn't wait too long before you come out and like show people, not on just on Treehouse Live, but show people through whatever avenues you have. All the really cool stuff that's coming out that you just, for whatever reason, decided that E3 wasn't the time or place to talk about that stuff, you know? To me, it seems like the perfect time to talk about all of your games.
Yep.
Because it's E3. But it used to be that way. It certainly isn't anymore. And it's frustrating, you know, for those of us who, you know, who still take the time and the effort and spend the money to go. I would like for Nintendo to do much better at E3 because that's the main reason I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a lot of invested in what Nintendo shows up with. And it sucks to see them. I mean, they've many times at E3, they've done spectacularly well. They've shown up with exactly the right games. They've shown them in exactly the right way.
Well, even just last year, last year, their booth was sort of the nexus of the show floor. At least in that hall.
They did really well last year, and it was partly because the other guys weren't doing well last year, and they looked like they had their britches on right. So that helped a lot. And also, they were so shitty in 2013 that the market improvement and the buzz around Zelda, which wasn't really at E3, but it was associated with it last year,
just from how their booth felt. Like, last year, it felt very upbeat. Like, because there were people coming into that booth because they were being invited in by the sheer chaos that Smash Bros. Was presenting them. Every angle you could approach Nintendo's booth from, except from the media-only back door, you were being greeted by giant screens of Smash Bros.
And I mean, that game is perfect for big crowds. I mean,
and here's the thing, when you looked right past it, right behind that was a Splatoon display.
What the hell is that?
Yeah. Right. Like, they nailed just booth layout, drawing your eyes to things they wanted you to see.
Mm-hmm.
This year.
Well, James, why don't you read another email for us?
KSO writes, "Is Metroid Prime Federation Force glittery enough for you, Guillaume?"
So we are going to end it right here. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And, of course, there will be lots more listener mail to come with lots of other topics selected by you. So please write an email to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. A couple of quick plugs. I am on the latest Connectivity, which is another podcast we do here, with Nick Bray, who's now running that show. And we talked about Metroid. It was recorded before E3, so it's all about what would I like to see in a Metroid game? What would I like to see that series go to? And all the stuff I said on there could still happen, even though it won't. It's a lot of fun. So check that out. It's summer movie season, so I do like to try to remind people that I'm on a movie podcast called Box Office Poison. Been doing it for about 5 years now. So it's well-worn, good chemistry with the five of us guys on there. A lot of fun. So if you want to hear what I and some of my friends think about the latest summer movies, but the big ones and the little ones, go check it out on iTunes, Box Office Poison. It's part of crosstalk.com. And finally, I want to say thanks to everyone for your kind words about E3 coverage and all of your support for what we did and your participation with the Twitter questions and the back and forth and watching the videos, all that stuff. We really hope you enjoyed it. Of course, if you are a subscriber, make sure you actually got all the E3 episodes because they were going up pretty fast for a few days.
Oh, my God.
And there are 6 or 7 or 8 podcasts that we did during E3.
There are eight numbered episodes of the show, I believe.
Yeah. And they're all here on the Radio Free Nintendo feed. So if you're a subscriber, make sure you didn't miss any of those. I think they're all worth your time to check out. And I have to give a huge thanks to James, who basically posted almost all of those and did a lot of the back end work to make that stuff happen, as well as the many, many other duties that he had going on that week. And I really want to express a huge thanks to everyone who was able to come to E3 and be part of the show on our staff. We had about 10 or 11 people, I think, and they all did a great job. And I especially want to thank the home team who, even though people joke about it being, comfortable and much easier and whatever, those guys work really, really hard. They do a ton of work. They're in a challenging position to try to coordinate all that stuff when they're not together. They don't have that convenience. So they work just as hard, or in a lot of cases, I would say probably harder than those of us who are actually at the show. And they're a big part of the reason that we have E3 coverage here year after year at NWR. So I really want to thank all of those people for contributing. And of course, Alex, for the special music we had during E3, I thought that was fantastic. I loved it. So we really appreciate everything, and we hope you enjoyed E3. And we'll be wrestling with E3 for the rest of the year, of course. So
we have some amiibo to give away.
Oh my gosh.
Plug the damn amiibo, Johnny.
Are we gonna do this? I think you have to
please
read it.
Please do.
Why do I have to read it?
Let's add this on a positive. Let's end this on a positive note.
Let's end this on an amiibo note. So thanks to Chiron M. Red, who has graciously donated his personal amiibo for the Summer of Amiibo giveaway event. Each week we're giving away a different amiibo, and this week we're giving away a brand new Charizard. To enter this week's contest, send an email with the secret password to contest@nintendoworldreport.com with, quote, Summer of Amiibo, Week 2 in the subject line. What's the secret password? Flamethrower. John, take us out on that. Take us out on Flamethrower, John.
Lords of Thunder. That's all I got.
Good luck. Good luck, and don't forget to mail in your entries, John. Staff can't win Charizards.
Screw that.
There you go.
Screw that. I'm quitting.
Get an amiibo.
I'm quitting. I'm quitting amiibo RFN. I'm quitting winning. Nintendo World Report. I'm getting my Charizard. I'm coming, baby.
It'll all be worth it. Okay, that's it. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you next time right here on RFN.
Bye. Bye.
Babies for babies games.
Babies for babies.
Whoa.
it's a fair trade.
Yeah. Well, James, why don't you read another email for us?
KSO writes, Is Metroid Prime Federation Force glittery enough for you, Guillaume?
Well, actually, no, it's not. I think Glitter Metroid is going to be glitter Metroid-y enough next year when it's shown. I think that I'm going to keep bragging about this. I called Federation Forces just a year too early, or 2 years too early. You know, I called the whole squad-based federation, like, soldier playing thing that you did. Like, it looked completely different in my mind. It didn't look like a soccer game. Well, it didn't look cartoony.
All right, John. All right.
Baby game for babies?
John, dial it back.
But yeah, like, it looks like my prediction-o-meter is, you know, calibrated like a year or two too late. Or too early.
You're too
whatever.
Good at predicting. You predict
yeah, exactly.
too far out.
So I don't know.
Maybe they're just listening to the show. Maybe we're creating ideas.
Please look forward to it. Yeah, top minds at Nintendo are listening to me and my predictions. Maybe that's why Nintendo is doing so well right now.
There you go.
They're just like, we'll make this guy's dreams come true.
Are you gonna start a petition, like an online petition, to have them add more glitter to Federation Forces? Because I will sign that petition. I will put that petition on the front page of NintendoWorldReport.com.
Apparently, I don't need a petition. I just make it happen by saying it.
That's true.
You know there's a guy who's probably working on that game who I think might still listen to this show. So maybe we could get like a glitter mode in multiplayer, like Blast Ball. Like maybe glitter can be a power up in Blast Ball or something like that. That'd be pretty amazing.
I thought we weren't going to talk about the fact that Kensuke listens to the show.
my old buddy Ken. Yeah. No, not him. But anyway, yeah, Metroid Federation Force, there's a lot more to say about that game. I guess.
Yeah, we did receive more emails.
Oh, we received more emails.
Indeed we did, which we'll try to get into soon. I'll say in quick summary, because I'm maybe the biggest Metroid fan here on the show. I talked about it briefly on Game Trailers Live, which, you know, I hope some people got to watch that. We'll include a link. In case you haven't seen it yet, but Neil Ronahan and I were on there for about 90 minutes, I guess. It flew by really fast, but we got to go over and be on game trailers, and it was really fun. We kind of hit all the high points of E3. It's worth checking out, I think, and it ends up being basically a podcast. So I think you'll enjoy it a lot. And we talked about this, and I kind of laid it out there. I was like, look, I'm not pissed at all about Federation Force. I'm also not necessarily that interested in it from what I've seen so far, but I've seen very little. I didn't get to watch the Treehouse Live thing. I have not had time. I really want to. And I want to learn a lot more about it. I'm also very curious to see, since that is a 2016 game, I feel like, I wonder if maybe they pivot a little bit based on the response here, or at least they show it in a different way next time. But the fact that, you know, the campaign part of it, which is way more interesting than Blast Ball, was not at E3. I didn't get to play it.
I mean, that tells me
I don't know anything about it, other than what was in the digital event. It just seems like a big question mark still to me.
I mean, that tells us more than anything that that game is still raw. Otherwise, it would have been play something besides Blast Ball probably would have been playable.
Yeah, I think you're. I mean, Blast Ball seems a lot simpler and easier to get working than a big online 4-player campaign co-op mode, you know, with bosses and mission objectives and stuff like that. So yeah, you're probably right. But I don't love the art style from what I've seen, but you know, it could grow on me, or they could still be tweaking it. So that doesn't concern me a ton. You know, I don't give two shits about the Galactic Federation or what they're doing, but they could, you know, I've seen in the interviews where Tanabe talks about going to different planets and stuff like that. And I think, you know, there's a lot of potential there. We've talked about it many times with Metroid. So, I'm still very curious about it. I'd like to think that Nintendo is also making a Samus Aran game. You know, a more traditional looking Metroid, or a traditional playing Metroid, or just innovative in a different way that's maybe a little more familiar and true to the series, but still fresh and cool. And maybe they just decided it wasn't as far along. It wasn't as ready to show. You know, and like a lot of other things, you just look at this stuff and you just have to say, it feels like their big guns are trained at NX this year. It feels like they're working on stuff that they, even if it was ready to show, they didn't want to show it because it would kind of give away too much about what NX really is all about. And they don't want to do that yet, or it would take away from what they've got left for Wii U and 3DS. But Federation Force seems okay. Sure. I liked Hunters. You know, I like the spinoffs. I like multiplayer in Metroid Prime 2. I can dig it if it's fun and if it's done well. I'm okay with
it. And
that.
If it's not in the absence of Metroid Prime,
like, exactly.
Fuck.
I mean, if it's coming out along with this other awesome stuff.
Yep.
You know, it's like, what if, what if Triforce Heroes was the only Zelda game coming out for the next 3 or 4 years? I think you'd get a very similar response to Federation Force. It's like, hey, this might be fun, but surely you're working on something else too. And yeah, they probably are.
Well, that's the thing. So, it's like an article I read about the guys that made Fallout 4 with that Fallout Shelter iOS game. He said, yeah, there's no way that we would have released that game without not alongside the main game, or like, you know what I mean, like showing the main game, because people would have had pitchforks out and they would have lynched us. Which is exactly what happened here. It's like, exactly. this game is totally fine if you're doing it like alongside Metroid Prime, or saying, hey, there's a Metroid Prime in the works, but this other game is, you know, in the meantime, we're releasing this. That would have been cool. But they just mishandled it. I mean, they're saying nothing about Metroid Prime, and they're like, ah, you know, maybe in 3 years or whatever. It's like, that's not what people want to hear, dude.
The same time, like, I don't know, I didn't see, there hasn't been an Alien movie in a long time, and I didn't see people send death threats to Ridley Scott when he made Prometheus.
They should have!
I guess they should have, given the movie, it wasn't very good, but, I mean, you know, like, it's kind of a similar situation where, this other franchise you're not doing anything with, instead you're doing this weird kind of spin-off, I don't know, like, I see that, but kind of like I think it's a weird reaction. I think people,
I know it is, certainly
completely overreacted. Don't. The petition, of course, is ridiculous. But
that's
even
stupid.
Just even the kind of feeling that, well, you should have had a real one. I'm not sure I agree with that.
If it's not ready to talk about, then it's ridiculous to say, well, you need to talk about it anyway. It's like, why?
No,
like
when they want to announce that game,
they want to announce that game.
What pisses me off is how they're very dismissive. It's like, okay, well, here's this Metroid Prime game. Okay, that's cool, but, you know, they know people want a Metroid Prime game or something like it.
Well, they know a tiny number of people want a Metroid Prime game.
Whatever. I mean,
honestly, the I think the only thing they did wrong here was just be tone deaf to people's expectations.
Exactly.
What could they have told them? They just announce the game when they don't have anything to say about it.
It's like,
that
okay,
just
well,
buried everything else. I mean,
then okay, let's say this. Let's say they come out with a like, you know, so everybody wants a new
Kickstarter on it. We're going to announce a Kickstarter for Metroid Prime game.
All right, sure, let's save this for another show.
Indeed, yes. There's too much to chew on here.
That was my cut.
Why did we do that Metroid one? Why?
Because I just...